Michaels and Marty Jannetty, The Rockers. Also, the Birdman, Coco Beware. He takes on the model, Rick Martel. But let's get back to the main event. What will happen when two of the most...
The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant EM Radio.
Recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on a minute. Let me get Dave in here.
Yo.
Yo, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, let's get this going. Ladies and gentlemen, your new recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, from the current to the way back, you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined by my tag team partner in crime,
Omega Powers.
Yeah, you're back from the dead. How you been, Skippy?
I'm just, you know, shaking off the cobwebs.
Yeah, huh? How was your workload? Did it all right or what?
Yeah, I did all right. Yesterday going into today, I was up for like 24 hours driving people back to the motherland. You know how it goes.
To the motherland?
Yeah.
Hey, Seuss. All right. Well, of course, we are live on the Rant Network,
We're alive.
RantEMRadio.com is the place. We are a Shining Wizards Network production. And hello to everybody in the chat room. Nobody's in there, I believe. Let me see who's in there. I don't even know. No, Tank's in there. I saw Scott in there. I think I saw some people. Anyway, hello, chat room. Hello, everybody who's listening live on the Rant on your TuneIn app if you're on the go. And that's pretty much it. So, I'm sorry, Dave, you were saying, how was your week now?
It was crazy, man. It was hectic. I'm surprised I'm still awake right now.
So you did everything you had to do, though. You knocked everything out.
Yeah, I took care of business, bro. TCB.
TCB, pimpin'. TCB. Yeah. That's how the Turnbuckle Throwbacks do things, man. All right, so TCB. Speaking of TCB, we have a... before I get into my news, I have a rant. And this rant has nothing to do with Dave. I mean, Dave was with me this weekend. But you were actually away. Here's what happened. All right, so let's rewind. So now Saturday, of course, it's the big world of the world premiere, the return of the world premiere wrestling in Queens, New York. Mm-hmm. Dave and I get invited to the event, I guess the pre-show event, I guess if you want to call it that, the Holy Grail,
the Holy Grail. Yeah.
Okay. So now, I learned a couple of things, first of all, equipment-wise, the next time if we do decide to do something like this again, we're gonna get a wireless microphone because, all the wrestlers that were there were trying to push their merch. And Dave went around graciously and gave everybody a business card and said, come sit by the table and hang out. So, you know, I'll get to the opening couple of minutes in a couple of seconds. I just want to tell everybody how it was. So now, this event was at a casino. And at the top of the casino, there's this big convention hall. And they put Dave and I in the middle of the floor. I mean, this was a prime spot.
Right by the fucking socks table.
Right in front of the merch and socks table. There was some company there selling socks with the people.
Selling WPW t-shirts and socks, polka dot, rainbow, sprinkles, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, they were doing some kind of fundraising for a couple of booths, and I guess this was part of the fundraising because they had some charities and stuff. And the people promoting this really tried to add an eclectic mix of people selling different things, and I thought that was cool. All right, so now Dave and I are not really prepared. We don't have a wireless mic. We can't talk to our friends. We had a couple people who knew us there, and I thought, wow, this is great. We could talk to people. The guy who got us there was so busy, he running around like a headless chicken. Everybody had a radio or a microphone. The place is huge.
Yeah.
And
it's so, fucking casino.
It is. So now, that was strike one. Strike two, I didn't eat before we got to the event. I was very nervous about the event. I wanted to get all my stuff in order, and Dave was picking me up on his way. Dave lives not too far from me in New Jersey, so he picked me up on his way in. And I got to make sure I packed all my equipment. I had to go to Radio Shack, get some wires, get some other crap, and just, figure that out. So now I didn't eat. So by the time we got there, we set up, and the first thing we do is test everything out. And so Mickie James walks in with, I believe, Becky Bayless.
Her big-ass titties.
Jesus Christ. So now I start the podcast. First of all, Dave and I have about 3 hours of audio. Some of it's really good. Some of it is fucking terrible.
Some of it's just us eating nachos.
Some of it, yeah. Well, I'll get to that in a second.
Actually, most of it is just us eating nachos.
No, most of it is us. Well, we held a good conversation for a while. Yeah. And then we wound up spending about a half hour, maybe an hour, watching some old WCW pay-per-view on the network.
Mongolian Warrior.
Yeah, exactly. So now how this goes was Mickie James comes walking in, and she goes right to me while I'm talking to Dave. I'm facing Dave, and then she comes to the right in front of my face and goes, "Are you talking about me?" And I look over and I went, "Whoa, hello there." Like, she was right in my face. I'm like,
"Yeah."
"Oh, hello." She says, "Oh, nice hat." And she complimented me. And I said, "How are you?" And we said, we chatted for like a split second. And I said, "If you get a chance, come back to the table." She said, "Okay, no problem." So that was nice.
She never came back.
Well, let me tell you something, though. Anything you heard about Mickie James, like looks-wise, anything you saw on the internet or on TV, it's all true. And I don't like women's wrestling. She's absolutely stunning. She is absolutely stunning. So that was cool. We got some love from Bill Apter, who is the old editor of – you guys don't know who Bill Apter is. You shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But Bill Apter was the MC, and he came over to the table. He saw the banner. He remembered us, and he not only remembered us, but he plugged the network, and he plugged all our stuff, and he read off our cards and thanked us for coming. And throughout the entire day, Bill was very gracious to us, and that was cool. So, because we were the only people broadcasting there.
Yeah.
They had some fucking house DJ who kept playing this, Jersey Shore fist pumping.
Hey, the guy played some, he played, four Def Leppard songs. Give him some slack.
Either way. He did actually play some rock and roll, some good 80s rock towards either way. Double A in the chat room saying, but she has some serious beef curtains. Listen, I don't care about her cutlets. She was stunning. So, if she has a vagine like a sleeve of wizard, that's on her. So, anyway.
Oh, I bet Double A would still want to walk through those beef curtains.
Double A would run through those and stomp mud holes in them if I know the boss man.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to know him. So he would probably rat-a-tat-tat that ass, as they say around the way. Now the DJ's going, the music's going. Now I'm fucking starving at this point, right? I'm beside myself. So now Dave says, there's a food court downstairs. Now the problem is, Dave doesn't know how to work the equipment. So why am I going to leave Dave with the equipment and not do anything? So I figured I'd go.
Can't leave me alone with anything.
Right, because you're a mess. Yeah. So now here's what happens. I go, and I go, there's like a buffet style to the back of the convention center. So I go in the back of the convention center, and there is nachos, hot dogs, pretzels, water, and soda. Now, the nachos was a huge bowl, like a big plastic bowl. So I figured, Dave and I can knock this out until we see some real food. And Dave is pretty health conscious, but at this point, I'm hungry, he's hungry. I can give a shit if he's health conscious or not. So I buy the nachos. The nachos, the soda, and the pretzel cost me $21.
Good God.
I came back to the table. I'm like, you better make this last, because I ain't buying no more fucking food today.
Yes.
So that was fun. We talked and we made some observations. Now,
and we got to see Rowdy Piper walk by us.
Rowdy Piper came by us. Bob Orton came by, said hello. J.J. Dillon said hello. Matt Stryker said hello. I'll get to him in a few minutes because there's a lot of shit going on with him and Kevin Matthews. Who else came by and said hello? Let me see.
Yes, I would trust a hot dog from a wrestling show.
Just
off the chat.
Yeah, you know what? This is not just a wrestling show. This is a This is casino food. If you guys have been to Atlantic City, if you ever been to the Sands in Bethlehem, PA, or if you have been to a casino in wherever your neck of the woods is, food's more expensive there. Why? It's a convenience. Same thing when you go to an airport and you pay fucking $7 for a bagel, you know? It's the same thing. It's a convenience. Same.
You know, we should all be grateful that there is food in the casino.
Yeah, Axel's right. Supply and demand. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, so Piper's there, like Dave said, Orton's there. A lot of indie guys are there. Matt Morgan's there. I mentioned Becky Bayless. Nunzio was there. Who else? There's a lot of guys. Joe Gertner was there. And, you know, a NASCAR was there. A half-naked Puerto Rican chick with the NASCAR, she was there.
Who's the WPW stock race car?
I don't know who the driver is, but they had a stock. They had a NASCAR there. They had
the money they can get Thurman Sparky Plug to be on it.
Should have raced that thing, Sparky Plug. Let's see.
They raced it through the fucking wall.
Pretty much.
And they had a T-shirt taped to the car.
Yeah, yeah, and a half naked Puerto Rican chick with it, which wasn't bad. You know, nice on the eyes.
It's on the inside, and the car was on the outside.
And Dave was eyeballing her the entire day. I'm like, he's gonna kill her.
Eyeballing this chick.
Yes, you were. You were eyeballing her, and you were gonna put her in that body bag I gave you for that video you were shooting. Yeah, you were. Stop faking the funk. So now we do this, and you know the day is getting progressively long. Now we're a couple of hours in.
Like 10 hours in.
No, not 10 hours. We're about 3 or 4
Wait
hours
for
in.
Wait the show to start 15 hours later.
Now, Dave and I were under the impression that we were going to be doing commentary, like, you know, ringside stuff. Come to find out, if I didn't check my Facebook, I learned that Joel Gertner, J.J. Dillon, and Bill Apter were doing it, and the promoter never told us. So, again, not too upset. Dave and I are there for the experience, and it really was a nice venue. It wasn't too much out of the way. And we got to just, you know, experience what it was like and, you know, prepare ourselves if we ever do this again. So we come to the end of the night. Dave is exhausted. I'm pretty much getting tired. My sister comes and brings us food.
White Castle.
Yeah, good looking out, Tony. When my sister was in the area, she brought us White Castle. And we bounced. We bounced after the first match. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Now, I'm glad we broke out, and I'm going to tell you why. Now, The original plan was when we realized that we weren't going to call the event and do commentary, we were going to put the equipment back in the car and come back. But at this point, I'm like, you know what? The place is packed. They have at least, and Dave, am I exaggerating, about 1,000 people?
Yeah, it had to have been about 1,000.
About 1,000. Now, mind you, they're going up against Pro Wrestling Syndicate, who had a show. They're going up against Warriors of Wrestling, who had a show out here in Staten Island. And they also were going up against a Madison Square Garden house show. So for them to draw 1,000 people, even if they gave tickets away, if you drew 1,000 people, that is fantastic. Fan-fucking-tastic. For you, if you can do that and draw 1,000 people for an indie show, that's just as good as Ring of Honor. That's almost as good as PWS, who's on fire right now. And that's way better than TNA. And a few other ones, and we'll get into that in a little while.
I think everybody's doing better than TNA at this point.
Yeah, I'm sad about that. We'll get into that in a few minutes. So now, we pack up and we leave. And, of course, we call it a night. I go home and I go on Facebook.
Actually, before we were leaving, Virgil walks by. He's like, damn.
Oh, I didn't. You know what? I wasn't going to mention Virgil, but you know what? Now you.
All right. So he wants us to talk about Virgil. So
all right. So let's talk about her. So now, right before we realize we're not staying. Virgil's there, and he's been there for a while, of course, letting himself in again, as usual. Lets himself in.
Hey, wait a second.
Said that Virgil came in.
He could have been joking.
I know he wasn't joking. You know why I know he wasn't joking? Because that's what Virgil does. He puts himself into these situations, sets himself up in a corner of the facility, which he did again this time.
He had a better spot than some of the actual talent that was on the show that night. There were some guys that were, like, way in the back. Virgil had some prime real estate. He wasn't too far away from J.J. Dillon.
It doesn't matter. He was at the corner of the show. And so now Dave goes over to him and gives him a card and asks him to come over and say, what's up? And Dave doesn't even get his whole sentence out. And what happens? He blows you off, doesn't he?
Yeah. But that's Virgil. He's selling his shit. He can't walk away from the $1 million title. The thing's worth $1 million.
It's cubic zirconian, and it's not even the real one. All right? This fuckbag, all he had to do, he didn't have to sit with us for a whole day. He didn't have to, like, at least like the other guy said they'll try or maybe. Like, nobody told you no except for Virgil. So outside of
everybody at least had the, you know, the grace to say, like, maybe later, which means no, but, you know, they're trying to be nice about it. Virgil was just straight up no.
Well, Virgil can go fuck his hand. And the next time you want to dedicate an entire podcast to this asshat, I really hope you're in studio with me because then I don't have to hang up on you. You know what I'm saying?
Don't worry. There'll be virtual part two.
Yeah, you could do that on your own. Go get your own podcast. And
Virgil has no obligations to us. Virgil is Virgil. He's a one man show.
Axel, if I was with Dave, I would have told Virgil eat a bag of fried dicks. And actually,
the Under Armour shirt.
I actually did tell Virgil eat a bag of dicks. If we go through the audio, I think. You know, yeah.
Something like that. You said a lot of things about Virgil over the audio.
I did. Right to the promoter's face, too. I didn't give a shit. Okay. So now we go home. I go on social media, and I thank everybody. And I thank Anthony, Gargiulio, who was gracious enough to have us on. And I text him. I call him, and I get no response at all. So I figure maybe he's busy. Maybe he's doing his thing. You know, whatever. Of course, I'm looking at Facebook, and he's posting pictures up with him and Kelly, some other chicks. Hold on 1 second. We have a call. You know what? I'm not taking calls right now, guys. I'm not taking calls right now. We'll take calls in a few minutes. I got to get my rant on. So now, he doesn't answer my calls. And I'm getting a little tight. So now I see him on he's thanking people on social media. Now, again, he owes us nothing. Doesn't have to thank us for anything.
He let us in for free.
Let us in for free. That he was gracious enough to do that, and we appreciate everything he's done. Now, the next day, I see more pictures. I got whatever. So I just leave it alone. You know, let sleeping dogs lie. And I take my laptop out to the family's house, and I'm checking some emails, and I go on Facebook, and I see a really long thread regarding the talent that was on that night, and meaning our friend of the network, Kevin Matthews, who's also Pro Wrestling Syndicate mainstay and former WWE developmental talent. And he was supposed to fight Matt Stryker on this card. Apparently, he didn't fight Matt Stryker. And from what I was reading, he got 2 minutes in the ring. So now two grown men, one promoter, somebody else, they're fighting over Kevin not getting his match or whatever it was, and it was like a big to-do. Now I feel stupid. I'm like, great. I'm really glad that not only did we leave, but they didn't see us. Because Kevin was actually doing a double shot. Kevin did a PWS gig, and then he drove out from Jersey to Queens to do that match. Now yesterday, 2.5 Wrestlers put out their newest podcast on, of course, the Shining Wizards Network. It's him, Pat Buck, and Jay Silva. Good show. Check it out. It's good stuff. And now we get Kevin's side of the story. And Kevin's side of the story was that he got a call saying that does he mind fighting in some other match. And it turns out he didn't get to fight Matt Stryker, and because Matt Stryker didn't want to fight him for some reason. And like went into the promoter's ear and talked him out of it, and they put him off the match, and Kevin called him a coward and some other names. And Kevin fought like a 12-minute match and did nothing. He was on the outside of the apron, and politics prevented him from showcasing. So now I'm like.
So he did the 12-minute headlock.
He didn't do anything. He was outside the ring.
Oh.
It was like a 6-man or whatever the hell it was.
Oh.
So now I'm tight. You know, I'm upset because, you know, again, Kevin probably doesn't even listen to the podcast, our podcast. He's friends with us through the network. We sat with him a few times. We're big fans of PWS. We've already promoted them a million times. And, you know, I'm upset because he's upset, and now people on social media, I didn't want them to think that because we were there, I didn't want to be linked to all that.
Meanwhile, I'm not even sure if we are linked to it.
We're not, but I'm really upset because of the politics. And I say that because sitting there all day looking at these creeps, that these fans and promoters and wrestlers, these are grown men fighting over, fighting over nonsense. Like, fighting over other people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's a little too much.
Right, so now Now, when I first found out that, before I heard Kevin's side of the story, of course, I flip out. I'm saying to myself, now, if Scott's in the chat room, Scott called in last week. Scott's an old friend of mine. Scott knows I was in a band. We all hung out in the same crew. I was in a band, and my band, back in the day, Chaos Groove, we got a gig at CBGB's. And it was a Monday night, and a promoter said, you have 30 minutes to play, and let me know what you want to do. We drew 100 people for a Monday night, because it was a showcase night, they call it. You know, you showcase your talent, if they like you to bring it back, right? So now, we play, and I'm all about performance. Even if you got 2 minutes in the ring, 2 minutes in the ring, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 8 minutes, you know, do your thing. But I didn't know he didn't get to go in the ring. I thought he just went in the ring for 2 minutes and, you know, complained about it. But that wasn't the case. He didn't even get to wrestle.
He was barred from ringside.
And he was pissed off because, you know, he got a payday.
He was at ringside, my bad.
But he got a payday. But his whole thing was he wants to perform.
Yeah.
He had no obligation to these people. He gets taken care of at PWS. He helps out and all that. And he's a mainstay there. And I know Pat has the school now with Kurt Hawkins, and they're doing big things at PWS. And God bless them. We're big fans. We already established that. I just feel like, and just Dave, the bickering, dude, you're so lucky, man. You did not see it. It was fucking ridiculous, dude. These are grown men fighting over wrestlers.
Yeah.
And it was so. I got like douche chills. You ever get douche chills? Like
all the time.
Oh, dude, it's the worst. It is the worst.
I got douche chills when that dude, was creeping on Mickey James while she was at the table.
Yeah, dude, Mickey James comes right to the table, and some dude comes zippity-zapping, like, right next to her, like, with a camera, like, snapping.
Yeah, like he looked like the fucking Ripper from Last Action Hero, too.
Dude, it was terrible. And so now, I've been a wrestling fan since I'm 7 years old, and I never, as a kid, I went to one wrestling convention. And I didn't get to my next wrestling convention until last year. I'm not a big fan of these things. I went to a lot of matches.
Yeah.
I put a lot of time and money into this. I love the art and what is the performance and the entertainment of wrestling. Okay? What I don't like is this indie wrestling fucking, like, this subculture, I guess you want to call it, that people have to, like, you know, put themselves over on social media and, like, bicker and all this other crap. And, you know, again, this is nothing against Kevin or Pat or any other buddy I talk to on Facebook that's an indie wrestler. Because, again, some of these guys are so into their character that they haven't accepted mediocrity and got a real fucking job.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are 35 and 40 years old thinking, oh, yeah, Vince is going to call me. Triple H is going to call me. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to OVW for TNA. Oh, no, I'm going to Japan. And people think that. I never wanted to be a wrestler. I never wanted to be any... I wanted to be involved in the business, and I thought this was the best way. I like to talk about it. And I feel like I've done that, and I think I've gotten the respect from my peers in the short time that I am doing this.
Yeah.
And I feel like this bickering on social media and on, like... Dude, it was the craziest shit you've ever seen. I'm like, I'm so glad that that Dave didn't see this. Because, like, you know, even Eddie was in the thread, and it was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, grown men were fighting over it. Like, Kevin wasn't even involved. Like, Kevin was, like, not even in the thread at one point, you know? And I understand. And there was a couple of – and Kevin was more mad that a couple of PWS guys went to that show to see, like, Phil Dido and his family – they were there. A bunch of people were there from PWS to see Kevin wrestle, and they didn't get to see him wrestle because of fucking politics.
Yeah.
So, again, I wish WPW all the best. I'm a little upset that he didn't return any of my calls. And I'm a little upset that Kevin didn't get his due. And I'm also upset that I paid $21 for fucking nachos. So.
Well, I enjoyed them, Phil, so it wasn't a complete waste.
All right, so whoever called, we'll take some calls in a little while. I apologize. I just wanted to get my rant out. And, again, Dave had no clue because he wasn't here. He was away on business.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever it is. All right, so, Dave, we'll do a little news. We don't have that many news items tonight.
Raw. I missed Raw. What happened?
We'll get into Raw. I have it all mapped out.
Okay.
first of all, any of you comic book heads, I know Surfer's in the room. I hope Surfer's in the room. Shout out to Surfer.
I saw Surfer. What's up, Surfer?
Surfer's the man. Even though they buried him on the rant last night, that was pretty funny.
They buried him?
They didn't bury him. They planned his funeral out and his wake and stuff. And I couldn't call in because I was listening online on the way home. But apparently he had some medical issue, and they were like, you know, they were going to have some, you know, all the guys from the network are going to have, they're going to bury him in his comics. They're going to do a little thing for him. So that was nice. That was cute.
Does he have the disease known as gingivitis?
No, I think he had, like, the gout or some shit. I missed out because, again, I was lost in translation. I was going home, and I couldn't get the feed. But anyway, so shout out to Surfer. Surfer's a big comic book fan. I think, and I don't know if he reported this because I missed his last episode. I didn't download it yet. But WWE Comics is putting out a paperback called Money in the Bank. It's going to be written by Mick Foley, and it's going to be released on June 17th. If you haven't read any of their comic books, the art is okay. The kid digs them, and they're a good read if you're, you know, if you're under 15 years old. So,
so grown-ups won't enjoy this comic book?
No, not really. Oh, it was the gout. Okay, Surfer, gout. I'm sorry. So I hope you take care of that gout, brother. Exercise, actually, is good for the gout.
Smoke that weed.
Smoke weed every day. all right, so that's going to be released on June 17th. Speaking of small things, Hornswoggle will be attending the premiere of the Muppets Most Wanted movie in Hollywood, and that was last night, actually. He has a role in the movie. Apparently, he plays a prisoner in a Russian prison.
Wow. what has he been up to? Is he still part of the WWE? Or
I'm going to say yeah. I guess he has he's got like Kali status where Kali...
He's got a Kali's contract.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who cares, actually, you know? I thought it was interesting, that's all, because we're big Muppet fans here in the Ray House, so... All right. I saw the Lockdown pay-per-view.
How was that?
Wasn't terrible. A couple things bothered me.
It wasn't terrible, but was it good?
It was okay.
Was it acceptable?
I'll give it a 5 out of 10. How about that?
So it's average.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
900 tickets, Dave.
Wow.
900 tickets. Last year's lockdown was 6,000. 900 tickets.
Wow. They dropped.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. And then AA called it, man. That's his hood. A lot of stuff's going on down in South Florida this time of year.
Uh-huh.
They don't draw as is. And here's my thing, too. Why would you book cards in these huge places? Why? When you know you're not going to sell out. When you know you're not going to sell out, why?
Wait, how was the picture? Did you see all these empty seats?
Yeah, dude, it was a fucking empty. The Miami Hurricanes play college basketball there.
Shit. So this is like that AWA, I think it was like the first Super Clash when they did it at the Cow Palace.
In San Jose, yeah.
It was, yeah,
it was almost the same.
Like
it was,
people.
Yeah, it was almost the same thing, bro.
Wow.
It was almost the same thing.
So Hulk Hogan took all 10 of his fans with him.
I thought it was a solid card. Here are the results, all right? Sonata, Yasu, and Muda beat Bad Influence and Chris Sabin. That was a good match. I'm sorry to Adam Henning from the Midnight Jury. I still don't like Sam Shaw. He fought Anderson in a cage. All the matches were in a cage. Sam Shaw is still... I know he plays a creepy character, but he's just really creepy. It's creepy. Just creepy.
I haven't even watched TNA.
Yeah, you're not missing anything. Bobby Lashley came back to fight EC3 because Kurt Angle was hurt. Nobody cares. Bobby Lashley's terrible, by the way. Bobby Lashley is god.
Oh, was he ever good?
That's the thing, too, that bothers me because he really wasn't. And he was like a main eventer in WWE and ECW. That pissed me off.
Yeah, he was the ECW champion. He was involved in the fucking the haircut match, the billionaire haircut match with Trump and McMahon.
Right.
They brought him to TNA. They made him like a name in TNA too. He tried to do his mixed martial arts shit. That didn't really pan out too well. Wait, who is he married to? He's married to one of the Nitro girls, or was it Booker T's ex-wife, or what?
I have no idea. Chat room, if you know that, put it up. I really don't know who Bobby Lashley is married to. I'm not a big fan of his at all. He beat EC3.
Are you a fan of his wife?
Well, I don't know who his wife is. I'm sure she's a piece of ass. She's a big bulky, fit dude, so they get all the trim.
Oh, Axel Foley shared a photo, and it's just kind of like lots of empty seats.
Yeah, thank you, Axel. Okay. Tigre Uno from Mexico, he beat Manic with the Sabretooth Splash. It was like a 450. It was pretty cool, actually. You got to check it out. Last Man Standing, Gunner beats James Storm. That was actually a decent match. Madison Rayne beat Gail Kim. Nobody cares. World Heavyweight Champion Magnus defeats Samoa Joe with the fucking Undertaker angle, where Abyss comes out from the ring and from under the ring and pulls Joe in.
So wow. He's like a supernatural British guy, or?
Yeah, something like that. So he's just, again, like I tell Will from the call-in show, he's a poor man's Randy Orton. That's who Magnus is. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Your Lethal Lockdown match was Team MVP defeating Team Dixie. Jeff Hardy comes out as Willow, as predicted. Let me ask you something. Why would you take your top draw in the company? Single-handedly, Jeff Hardy right now is your top draw, right? Is that safe to say?
He sells, or the only draw.
Right. He sells all the merch. He's very popular with the kids. The girls love him. Why would you take his shitty backyard wrestling angle and put it on your best character? Why? Why would you do that?
To satisfy guys like...
To satisfy himself. Because unless you wrestled for Omega... Unless you wrestled for Omega...
First of all, how many people actually remember Omega? Like,
nobody does.
That was just like a backyard fed.
It was
fed,
a backyard
right?
wrestling fed, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So unless you wrestled for them or you know them... Again, wait a minute. Rebus is a Patriot? Oh, no. Now they're talking football free agency in the chat room. These guys are crazy. All right. Yeah. Now, maybe we get Jeff Hardy. But, like, why would you do that, though? Why? I don't understand. I don't understand why you would do that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's just such a weird thing to do. I can understand, like, when Hogan did Mr. America, there was, like, a storyline to it. Or when Dusty Rhodes did the Midnight Rider. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But like, for this, like, why? Why is he Willow?
I don't know.
Is there a reason behind it? Is it just because he's so fucked out of his mind that he has to be Willow?
I don't understand.
But weren't they advertising that Jeff Hardy would be back? Not just as Willow, but just him as Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, and he can't travel the states. Like, I mean, not the states. He can't go out of state because he's a criminal.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't...
So they're going to be doing, like, the next year's TV shows and pay-per-views all in, what, Florida?
Dude, I don't know, man. Everybody keeps saying that they're going to fold. They've been saying it for fucking 10 years it's going to fold.
Yeah, but now it's, like, now it's getting, like, crucial. They still have...
It was getting crucial last year. When Hogan was there, they were bleeding money. When they were giving Hogan and Sting $30,000 and $40,000 in appearance... They're bleeding money. They're gonna fold. And you know what? They're not folding. So I don't know. Anyway, all right. Let's go to Raw.
Never say never, Phil.
I hope they don't. I want competition. I want more wrestling on television. I don't want 8 hours of WWE programming and then just 2 hours of whatever. You know, I was spoiled in the 90s. I had Raw, I had Nitro, I had ECW, I had ESPN Classics. I was spoiled in the 90s. Okay? All right.
But so, it doesn't sound like you're enjoying, what's available.
I'm not enjoying the every other card being terrible. Mm. I'm enjoying some of their stories up until Sunday. I'm enjoying the talent. I love Bobby Roode. What's his face? I love Eric Young. I do like Abyss. You know, I do like guys that are there. I dig them. I really do. Zema Ion, when he wrestles, he's good. All the X Division. Austin Aries is an animal. I love Austin Aries. Austin Aries is a fantastic talent.
Yeah.
James Storm is good. Gunner's good. They have a good roster of guys. Now with the American Wolves. Whatever. All right.
Yeah. Pressing on.
Pressing on. Raw was a good show. Not great. Decent. The crowd was fucking awful, considering it was Memphis, Tennessee, which was a hotbed for wrestling in back in the day.
Yeah, they believe in anything. That fucking Christmas tree that, you know, Lawler had, and just about anything that Lawler had was fucking over.
Right.
So I'm surprised, you know, I didn't see Raw. No. But if you're telling me the crowd was weak.
Crowd was weak, Dave.
The only thing I know about is I just saw that photo of, you know, the hijacking Raw, which it seems like, you know, it's just like all a WWE setup. I don't know how that came over.
I'll get into that in a second. They opened it up with Hogan announcing that there's going to be a 20-man over-the-top rope invitational battle royal. And the winner is going to receive an Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal Cup.
So only men that are invited to be a part of it can participate.
Well, it's like an open. I guess it's gonna be like an open challenge thing. So now,
but he said invitational, right?
Well, yeah, he did. But like, it was like, I'm sure they meant like WWE's gonna invite the guys and whatever. Now, what they'll probably do is I think they're gonna just throw guys that are not wrestling regularly in there. Maybe they'll bring some NXT guys up. And now Cena comes out and he puts his name in the hat. He wants to be in the tournament.
The Battle Royal.
What's that?
The Battle Royal, right?
The Battle Royal, yeah. He wants to be in the Battle Royal. And he gets ambushed by the Wyatts and whatever. Listen, and somebody mentioned on Facebook that Dave and Phil are going to go crazy because it's a trophy. Ronnie, shout out to Ronnie, by the way. Ronnie shouted us out right after the Raw. He's like, Dave and Phil are going to go crazy. Dave and Megapower, Phil and Megapower are going to go crazy for this. And he's right. Dave and I do like trophies.
Yeah.
And you know what? I dig it.
I love sashes, too.
Dude,
if I was wearing sashes, that's awesome.
Dude, I don't – honestly, and I love Andre the Giant. So to put Andre's name on a trophy every – if they do this every year, I'm good with it. And you know what? Give it an incentive. You know,
at WrestleMania.
Like, here, you want to go in the Invitational? Here, you get a trophy and a title shot. Or if you're in NXT, you get a bump up to the roster. You know, give it an incentive. You get a title shot on Raw the next night or something stupid. Because you know what? You know the Raws after Mania are always good.
Yeah.
You know? All right.
You still have the fucking international crowds still lingering around.
Yeah. So that was one of the Facebook questions, too. Tank wanted to know if we thought it was a good idea. Of course it's a good idea. You put Andre the Giant on anything, it'd be good.
And this is an old school show, so you know, battle royals absolutely acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. A battle royal anywhere is acceptable. I saw one in a supermarket.
In a parking lot, it's acceptable.
I saw one in a supermarket once, and it was crazy. All right.
They were throwing people into the fucking pond with all the quarters and pennies.
Pretty much.
Got thrown into there, you were eliminated.
They had some big Japan. When Big Japan was doing their death matches and shit, they had one card out of a supermarket. Yeah, they did. They did. They had like death matches in a supermarket.
I remember seeing. I don't know what Fed it was. Probably FMW, but they had. It was a fucking like a hot springs, you know, spa resort like death match, and it was like one of the fucking headhunters, and I don't remember who the other dude was, but like fighting each other in the fucking. Hot springs showers and all that kind of shit, and there's all these naked people running around. It was interesting, to say the least.
Either way, Battle Royals, good. Andre the Giant, even better. Okay.
They need to bring back the gimmick Battle Royal.
Yeah, wouldn't that
somebody,
be fun?
Somebody in the chat room mentioned that. That's a good idea. That was great.
That is a good idea. All right, so Dave mentioned before the Daniel Bryan Occupy Raw thing. Here's what they did. They brought out a bunch of people from catering and a bunch of people who help out, put them all in T-shirts. They brought some fans in, and they did a whole Occupy Raw. And they brought the whole bunch of guys in the ring and girls with Daniel Bryan, and he threatened to stay in the ring with these people until Triple H gives him a shot at a match at WrestleMania.
So, wait, he's fighting for a match that he's just going to get anyway at WrestleMania.
Gets better. So Triple H comes out. Get security. Two guys from security come out. They walk over. They walk down the ramp. They stop. They go, we're not doing this. They come back. Triple H is furious. Stephanie's furious. They're yelling. They're screaming. They're carrying on. Finally, he gets the match. He goes, now get out of my ring. you got the match. I'll get out of my ring. You don't, you know. He goes, ah, but Hunter, I'm not done yet. I don't want just the match. If I beat you, I want to be in the championship match at Mania.
Nice.
So there you go. Now he has the match, and he has a title match if he beats Triple H. So, now, I think kudos to Triple H for recognizing how over Daniel Bryan is and making everybody wait for it, and I'm happy about that because he's been screwing him since SummerSlam. I think it's fantastic, okay? That's first of all. And you agree with me. We talked about that in
Lincoln. Well, even before SummerSlam, since Mania when he lost to Sheamus in 30 seconds. I think that's where it really started.
Exactly. So now he gets a title match at Mania. He's going to shut the kids up, right? My hope is that he beats Triple H and gets a title match, right? And now you don't. Now you know what I want to have next happen next. I want Punk to come out and ruin it for him. How awesome would that be? He goes and beats Triple H in like a 20-minute melee. Triple H beats the shit out of him from pillar to post. He gets one over on Triple H, gets the entire crowd into it, gets the title match. He's got Batista and Randy Orton where he wants them, and CM Punk comes out as the corporate sellout and jacks him for it.
Mm.
And I could see the I'm telling you, I can write this. I wrote this, actually, while I was watching it. I can see the next night on Raw, Punk comes out, Triple H thanks him for being a company guy, Triple H thanks him for seeing the bigger picture, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I could see CM Punk picking his spot.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And now this would put Daniel Bryan on a fucking rocket ship to the moon. He'll be so over. To the moon, Alice. To the moon, I'm telling you. How awesome would that be, dude? Or do you not agree with me?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say.
Well, you're gonna be here, so I hope you're gonna mark out.
I'm gonna be live.
You're gonna be live at the Decadome, man.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes down. I don't really have an opinion on it just yet. Yeah, I would say mainly just because I don't know. My return to watching current wrestling has not been all that exciting. I was really excited, you know, during Rumble, seeing how the crowd was reacting. But now that it seems like, you know, they're kind of manipulating it, you know, to serve the company's needs, I'm not too into that. But we'll see how things pan out. You know, never say never. We'll see how it goes. As far as Punk goes, I don't know. I don't really have much of an opinion on that, or how I would even use Punk at the moment. But if anything, that he's got to be in the title picture. He's got to be on top, flat out.
Well, now Batista's the heel now, apparently, and he actually looked decent. It took him a month, but he got his win back. He looked good in the main event. Wasn't really.
He was maneuvering himself around the ring well.
Yeah, no, dude, he actually looked solid. He looked solid on Monday night. And now if you have Batista as the heel. And you have Randy Orton as this tweener, I guess, in between.
Yeah.
Now you bring Punk in; it's a whole new element now. If they had that going on, and now Daniel Bryan is like up against the world. You know, not that Randy Orton's gonna do a face turn because he's a terrible good guy. But again, I think it'd just be more riveting television. Again, you don't have to have the belt to be over. Okay,
yeah.
And all you, the internet wrestling community, let's take a step back, take a deep breath. He's not going anywhere, all right? He's on top of the world. He's got a great gimmick. He's banging a Bella. He's on top of the world right now. So let's take a step back and, you know, relax, all right?
I don't know, too. You know, I think it's also, you know, just some, you know, fan, you know, myself, too, included, you know, being the old school fan that I am. You know, I like seeing the top face as the champion, you know, going through his, you know, list of challengers. One of the things that I love about Daniel Bryan and, you know, one of the things I loved about him when he was Bryan Danielson and ROH and everywhere else, is the guy had some good fucking matches. I want to see this dude have some excellent matches. I'm not too, you know, WWE is what they are with storylines, but this guy can go. This cat can go. I want to see him in the ring with as many different personalities as possible. I want to see some amazing ring work. You know, I may be asking a little too much, you know, these days, but, you know, that's what I see with, you know, Daniel Bryan as WWE champion.
All right.
A fighting and defending champion.
All right. Well,
something that Bret Hart could never live up to with his integrated approach to wrestling and everything.
I gotta be honest, Dave. I've been working like an animal lately. You know that too.
Yeah.
I was so much on a high Tuesday morning on the way into work that after I watched Raw, I was so this is the way it should be. You know, keep us guessing, make us work for it. And you know, the younger fans need to, you know, grasp that. You know, the younger fans, you know, you have to, first of all, you have to listen to the old shit and watch the old shit to appreciate what you have going on now in sports entertainment. I think the younger fan doesn't do that as often as they should. I'm not knocking or saying that, you know, I'm smarter than the next person because I've been watching it for 30 years, but
you just want to be entertained on a level where it's not like, okay, we know what's going to happen like 10 months in advance.
Yes, and I've said this before to you and to anybody who listened to me, it's still to me the best form of entertainment I've ever seen next to a music show.
Yeah.
Bar none. You and I are both music fans.
Yeah.
And we're both huge wrestling fans and you know,
did plenty of gigs.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's that kind of party. You know, it's that kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right. I on the way home, I didn't, because it was on the way home, I didn't get to write it down, but they added some more names to the big ROH show in May.
Ooh.
For Japan. I think Nakamura is on it, and I think Tanahashi's on it also.
Yeah, they had them on the posters.
Yeah, but now they made it official.
Now they're confirmed.
Yeah,
now they're not just faces on the poster with a card subject to change.
So now I really hope that I get that ticket from you.
Yeah.
I really want to see the show.
We'll see what happens with that ticket. Maybe I'll put it up for grabs in a lethal lottery.
Oh.
And you'll have to fight for it.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
Yeah.
All right, I have no other news, okay? So we're going to take a really quick break.
And we got Facebook questions or something?
Do we?
Yeah.
I totally forgot. I apologize. We do have Facebook questions. My bad.
And what about phone calls?
We'll take phone calls.
Yeah.
Are you going anywhere? You have a hot date or something? You have any more chicks buried in your basement?
All right. Listen, there's nothing in my basement that's breathing, okay?
All right.
My basement is just for tools and water and other shit.
All right. I already answered Tank's question about Andre. Buddy Harry has two questions.
Yeah.
He actually messaged me and said, Harry was actually a little worried today. Shout out to Harry. There was a big explosion here in New York City. It was a big, terrible, terrible building explosion in Harlem today.
Really?
Yeah, two casualties. And I was at the Dispatch Comedy MS today, and you know, I had to monitor because, you know, sometimes we get these trauma patients that come in. And Harry was watching BBC Live in where he is in the UK. And he was like, hey, what's going on in New York? And I'm like, oh, man, you know. So shout out to Harry. He wants to know, what do you guys think of Mick Foley's run as commissioner? I didn't realize it, but he was the only commissioner for 6 months. Do you think it could have gone a bit longer? Dave, you want to answer that first?
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was that short. I thought it was going to be a lot longer. Like when I was watching that, I thoroughly enjoyed his time as commissioner and, you know, just like his different setups, his little gimmicks going on, like setting up his office in random parts of the building. You know, it was entertaining. I thought it was cool. And he was just like one of those dudes like Flair and like Austin who could, you know, they could pull it off. Just being who they are, they're having fun. And, you know, that's the extent of it. Yeah.
All right, I'm entertained by Mick Foley, whether he's on 6 months or 6 minutes. Big Mick Foley fan. I agree with Dave. I wouldn't have minded at all. So, and Harry also wants to know: do you think people always asking and moaning if Benoit is going to be in the Hall of Fame or the network, or just getting pissed at WWE trying to erase him, just doing it for the sake of doing it? To go against the grain, as they say, personally, I don't remember many Benoit T-shirts or having much of a fan base. Agreed, he was an awesome technical wrestler, but I can't think of any of the wrestlers who have passed who I'd rather see when we get the fucking network, he says in big letters. Such as Eddie Guerrero, British Bulldog, Brian Pillman. I thought, damn, I want to watch a Benoit match. All right. For the record, Benoit is not deleted from the network. He's on the network.
No, there's plenty of stuff, like his Super Brawl, two appearances there, WrestleMania, everything.
That's first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all,
There's no warnings about him, like, oh, we have a murderer on our show or anything like that.
Right, because when the NFL Network runs old Buffalo Bill shows and old Buffalo Bill documentaries, they don't fucking put a big X on O.J. Simpson running the field, and he killed two people, too.
Yeah, the big red censored X on his face.
Listen, I can differentiate the person from the athlete.
Yeah.
When I met him, fantastic person. In the ring, phenomenal. One of my top 10 favorite wrestlers of all time. I've said it before, and I'll say it again.
I'll say this about Benoit, too. Like, the dude was getting, like, standing ovations at shows.
Yes.
You know, towards the end of his career, which was, like, strange. Guys weren't getting standing ovations for their performances at these shows.
When he was champion, he couldn't sell the Garden out because it was just a bad time for wrestling, but he put on a good show.
Yeah.
I could differentiate the athlete from the person, okay? I'm not going to have his family over for dinner. I'm not going to interview their family in any of our shows. I'm not going to, you know, put him over like I used to in terms of, you know, whatever. But I thought he was a good athlete. He was a phenomenal wrestler. He was one of the best in the world at what he did. And sadly, he was sick. And because he was sick, he did something tragic to his family and then to himself. So I'm glad he did it to himself after he did it to his family. And I'm sad that he had to go out like that. So.
Unless it was somebody else, unless Kevin Sullivan is behind all this.
I hope not, because I like him too. All right.
He sent Purple Haze to do it.
Purple Haze, I summon thee. We got to do a we definitely need to do a Florida championship. This summer, I'm putting it on the calendar. Florida Championship Wrestling, we're doing the Purple Haze episode.
Yeah.
All right. Eric wants to know, should Demolition be inducted in the Hall of Fame? Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
There is an issue, though. I think Bill Eadie's a bitter about something. I don't know what the
fuck. Because I think once they left the WWE, copyrighted Demolition. So he couldn't go out and perform as Demolition.
But they do all the time.
I think that may have happened sometime like afterwards, or they're not getting royalties to Demolition, you know, stuff like that. I know that there was like a big debate over the creative part of Demolition, which I believe was actually it was Randy, how do you pronounce his last name? Randy Colley, who came up with the Demolition gimmick. And
yeah, Randy Colley was before Smash.
Yeah,
right. He was the original Smash.
Yeah, he was the one that came up with it, and you know, Bill Eadie was a part of it too, and you know, these guys, you know, wreaked havoc on the WWF. And extremely successful, you know, despite being a ripoff team, you know. Well, they're not. Granted, you know, it's like source material from the fucking Road Warrior movie with Mel Gibson, but still, you know, these guys were their own unique brand of wrestling, of fucking gimp wearing, you know, bondage gear wearing perverts coming to the ring.
Technically, they were better wrestlers than the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, well. Clubbing guys and stuff like that. So.
There will never be another Legion of Doom. They're my favorite tag team of all time. Even if it was a ripoff, imitation is the best form of flattery. And both guys were established.
Yeah.
Bill Eadie was the mass superstar for how many years? You know, what's his face? Barry Darso was, he was Crusher Khrushchev. He was the Repo Man. He was
Mr. Hole in One.
He was Mr. Hole in One. He was Blacktop Bully. I'm sure that's Tony C's favorite character, Mr.
And there was a fucking SummerSlam showdown before SummerSlam 91 where he faced Virgil, like just like wearing like a mask. Like there was a mystery opponent for Virgil. And they actually didn't even give the guy a fucking name. But he was just wearing a black mask. They put like a black arm pad over his tattoo so he wouldn't recognize the tattoo, but you can kind of see that eagle wing, you know, popping out. And I was like, It's fucking Barry Darso. Name jobber to Virgil.
Right. Let's see. Eric wants to know if they do get inducted, should they include Crush? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, of course. He's dead, and you got to honor his memory.
A couple of Rick Martel questions. Our buddy Sam and our buddy Bazo. How do you feel about Rick Martel never getting a run with a singles title? He should have had a run with the IC title at least. Also, this was the worst main event in Mania history, meaning the one we're doing today.
You know, Tony C needs to be easy.
I was talking about Baza and
Baza. Baza, Tony C was complaining about it too.
Well, because he's a Hulk Hogan guy, that's why.
Yeah, that's why.
All right.
This was not the worst WrestleMania. This was one of the best WrestleMania main events, in my fair estimation.
All right, so we'll take a quick break. Let me wet the whistle. Oh, hold on a second. Let's take a quick call. How about that? And then we'll go to break, all right? All right. Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
What's going on, Phil? Big Papa, how you doing?
Who's this, Georgie?
Yeah, it's Georgie. How you doing, Phil?
What'd it do, bro? What's going on?
What's going on? What are we talking about? Still WrestleMania 6 here?
We didn't go to WrestleMania yet. We're just about to go to a break. So you got something before I go to a break, and then we'll get into WrestleMania.
Okay, what's going on? I just want to say, Phil, you're doing great things right now. I just wanted to send you my blessing and just say that, you know, just thanks for the good stuff that you're putting out on over the years, man. Thanks a lot, man.
I appreciate the love. I appreciate you guys listening. As you know, we are doing WrestleMania 6 tonight. What is your favorite moment of Mania 6 before we go to a break?
Favorite moment of WrestleMania 6? Believe it or not, Demolition winning back the tag titles.
From the Colossal Connection. You know, I always had a soft spot for, we just ranted about Andre before, but I always had a soft spot for that team. So I like to see Andre with gold. That was great for me to see Andre with a belt, like legit. You know what I'm saying?
He
was on a decline at that point. He was like,
the guy wasn't even in the ring for the match.
No, not at all. Haku took the most of that beating. You know
exactly.
But it was Andre, bro. Andre was an attraction. He was a name. He was like he was the man. You know, it was. I don't know. For me,
and the Colossal Connection, they were cool as shit, man. I kind of liked them. You know, Andre would come with the choke and the headbutt, and Haku would come with that crescent kick, and bam, it was over.
Yeah. It's one of those kind of teams where you didn't know who the hell was going to beat them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
Man. So you know what? It's one of my favorite cards, and I like that we're doing this again. We're watching this stuff again, and we're getting into it. So, all right, brother. Let me take a quick break, and we're gonna knock this out. Thank you for calling in, and get back in the chat room and hold it down for me. All right.
Thanks a lot. No problem, Phil. All right. Dave, I'll get to you. Bye.
All right.
Take care, bro. All right, MP. Let's take a quick break. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on the Rant Network, rantemradio.com. We'll be right back.
BRB.
As soon as you're done with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, head over to rantemradio.com. That's right, rantemradio.com. We got you covered all week. You got the Rant live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. You got the Turnbuckle Throwbacks every Wednesday at 9 p.m. You have the Wrestling Call-In Show every Saturday at 11 p.m. And on Sundays, it's What Are You Reading with the Surfer at 6 p.m. It's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio. Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with our show, head over to the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com, home to many great shows covering a variety of topics, including pop culture, heavy metal, music, sports, television, movies, and, of course, wrestling. Shows like The Fallen Angels, Stickman and the Apex Radio, The Wolfman Jack Foley, Just Incredible's Pro Wrestling 101, The Midnight Jury, 2.5 Wrestlers, of course, us, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, the Neckbreaker Podcast, and of course, the Shining Wizards. So what are you waiting for? Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com right now. Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here. Hey, kids, you like the show? Do you like the logo on the show? Well, we put the logo on a T-shirt. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks and buy the shirt. The shirt is cheap, and it helps the show with original artwork by Dean Stahl. So what the hell are you waiting for? prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt! This is Dusty Rhodes, the Bullet of Woods, the three-time world heavyweight champion, baby. And when I'm not getting funky like a monkey, when I'm not looking for baby doll, and when I'm not getting my ass kicked by the four horsemen, I'm listening to Mega Powers Radio, baby, on geeksoftheindustry.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and at the end of a lightning bolt. Ooh, blue-eyed soul, Dusty Rhodes getting funky like a monkey with the Mega Powers Radio, if you will.
The following is a paid advertisement from Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle. The self-help seminar depicted in this program may not intend to provide any such benefit.
Has wrestling become boring for you? Find yourself ashamed to talk about it amongst your peers at work? Do you often think that maybe Nancy deserved it? Hi, I'm Anthony Black, and I'm here to tell you that you may be suffering from a serious wrestling dysfunction known as Russoitis. Russoitis is the leading cause of impotence in wrestling fans, and has also been linked to abnormal levels of patience for obviously crappy gimmicks and angles. But don't worry, there is hope for you yet. Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle are here every Monday night to help you through this debilitating infliction with their deep insights and personal advice.
I could touch my entire ass.
Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle have literally helped hundreds of thousands of fans come to terms with their wrestling dysfunction, and they can help you too.
I'm a retard.
But don't take my word for it. Listen to some testimonials from the people once afflicted by Russoitis.
I have been listening to Don and Tony and Kevin Castle for about 6 months now. Thanks to them, I now know more about wrestling and stuff. Me and my boyfriend, thank you, Don and Kev.
I've been listening to Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle for a while now. I only started because whenever I watched wrestling, I went to fucking kill someone and smear their brains on a wall. Now, thanks to them, I'm in more control and at peace with some of the horrid booking I see on TV. Thank you, Don and Kev. Fuck, 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 kill, fuck!
So don't just sit there. Go to wrestling-news.com and take part in the cure every Monday night after Raw. Commons.
Now the shit's about to kick off. This party looks whack. Let's take it back to straight hip-hop and start it from scratch. I'm about to bloody just jack up. Everybody get back. That's why my opinions are bad, because my rhymes on the red tag. Just like I did with addiction, I'm about to kick it. Like a magician, critics, I turn up. Got them still on the fence, whether to kick it. But quick to get impaled when I tell them kick it. So sick from looking pale. Well, that's my kick it. About to go ahead. Yeah, bitch, shout out to kick it. Let's bring it back to that vintage Slim bitch. The order MC in mix with the Vinci and MC Ren. And I don't mean Stimpy's friend.
All right.
Been public enemy since you thought P.E. was Jim Bitch.
All right.
Yeah, man. A little Slim Shady for you.
Oh, I can't stand Eminem.
Good.
Good thing I can't hear it on my end.
Good. I'm glad you can't hear it on your end. www.rantemradio.com is the place. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwback, the Shining Wizards Network production. You listen to some Slim Shady, who's going berserk. All right there, Eminem. Chill out. All right. We're back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks, everybody, in the chat room. And we're back.
We're back.
All right. So, here's the number. 718-878-6394. WrestleMania 6 is what we're doing right now. April 1st, 1990, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, in the Sky Dome. 67,678 people. Dave,
can I do the intro?
Dave, please do.
Upon the examination of the galaxies of space, images begin to appear. Images of strange and powerful forces. But of all the forces in the universe, the two most powerful, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, prepare to explode. Champion versus champion, title for title. It's the ultimate challenge. It's WrestleMania.
Now
I'm not going to be able to talk for the rest of the night.
Great. Good job, asshole. All right. Again, 67,678 peeps are in there. And we have the ultimate challenge is the tagline.
First face versus face mania event.
Hogan's first clean pin that he was pinned since 1982 at this point, right?
Which Tony C is still rolling in his non-existent grave about.
Alright, we open up with Robert Goulet, Canada's own Robert Goulet, with his own rendition of O Canada. This is also a couple of news and notes. This was this is the final WrestleMania to feature Jesse Ventura in the broadcast booth.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple of named people in the audience: WWE Hall of Famer and future world champion Edge and Christian were in attendance.
So is Lance Storm.
Lance Storm. If you guys are into Arrow, Stephen Amell was in attendance. Mary Tyler Moore was sitting ringside. You had Steve Allen. We'll get into Steve Allen in a few minutes.
Oh, gosh.
And he was in the bathroom with the Bolsheviks. And Rona Barrett interviewed Miss Elizabeth.
I always wonder who the hell she was. Like, it wasn't until, you know, doing research for this show. She's just like some gossip columnist.
Yeah, she was like the Dear Abby of Hollywood, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So now your main event was Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior, like Dave mentioned, face versus face. Both titles were on the line. On February 3rd, 1990, a week after Hogan and the Warrior crossed paths in the Royal Rumble, Hogan put forth the ultimate challenge to the Warrior and had to know whether Hulkamania or the power of the Warrior was the strongest force in the world.
Which was apropos because at this point, you know, Warrior's popularity was so high.
Right.
Which is kind of like, you know, who is the... And this answered all questions, and obviously, much to Tony C's chagrin, Warrior is the better man. But we'll get to that match in due time.
We absolutely will. So now the match was announced officially on February 10th of 1990. Was with the by President Jack Tunney on the take Tunney, as Tony C would call him. I put that picture on Facebook today. On February 24th, Tunney announced that both championships. The WWF Championship and the IC Championship would be on the line for the first time ever. So that's
They would have like champion versus champion matches. Like there was, Savage had, a circuit with a Warrior for champion versus champion matches on house shows. But they were all, you know, they would go to like a count out or DQ, whatever. But this is the first time this was like a main event on a television, you know, broadcast that people could see. So this was huge.
Dojo in the chat room. Wilona Woods, he's speaking of from Good Times. You know, it's one of my favorite shows, Dave. Wilona was the Rona Barrett of the projects. Goddamn right she was. Didn't Florida Evans's neck, though, look like a pack of hot dogs? You guys ever noticed that?
What's that?
Florida Evans, Mrs. Evans from Good Times.
Oh, yeah.
She had that the back of her neck look like a pack of hot dogs.
Same thing for King Kong Bundy.
But I'm talking about
Good
Mrs.
Times.
Evans, yeah. Because he brought up Wilona. Anyway, all right, stop. I'm getting sidetracked. I can do a whole fucking podcast on Good Times.
Yeah.
All right.
See, ain't we lucky if we got him.
That's right. Okay. There was dark match, Dave. You know that? You know Phil always pulls dark matches out.
Yeah, you love those dark matches.
Right. Well, your boy Paul Roma beat the Brooklyn Brawler. And Dave, like Dave always says, everybody beats the Brooklyn Brawler.
Everybody fucking beat that dude. Like, if you never beat that dude, you ain't nobody.
This is true, brother. This is very true.
He got a few wins off of some people. They were like, he was one of those dudes. I'm sure you've seen him at a lot of the MSG shows. Occasionally, he would get a win on some guys.
Right. No, I know. I'm just
And Iron Mike Sharp. Mike Sharp would get some wins on some dudes too.
Yeah, yeah, he sure did. All right, so let's go into it. Your first match, showing some love to Rick Martel, the model.
The model.
Fighting Coco Beware. I just want to mention before we get into this match, I love the mini ring that brings the wrestlers to the ring.
Yeah, I wish they would do. I wish they did that more. It was only 3 and 6 that they used the mini ring.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand why. I wrote Rick Martel still rules, even in his French poodle mullet perm.
Yeah, that was some hair back then.
Yeah, man.
But this was a solid opener. You know, I thought it was decent. It was strange, you know, having the heel, you know, start off winning the first match of the event. But the card for this Mania, I felt, was kind of lackluster. But I felt a lot of it was just the sheer attention was just all on Hogan and the Warrior.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, Coco put on a good match with Rick Martel.
Yeah. He missed the second turnbuckle crossbody. Gets his little legs put into the Boston Crab and says, I quit.
It's true. Beats him at 351 with the Boston Crab.
Yeah.
All right. Our buddy George, who just called in before, mentioned this match was his favorite, so shout out to him.
The Colostomy Connection versus Demolition.
Yeah. The network did use Demolition's song by Rick Derringer, Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy, I wrote. I also wrote Demolition was one of my favorites, and Colossal Connection was also one of my favorites. Good match, even though Andre didn't wrestle. Right?
Yeah, well, he was just on the apron the only time that he was out. You know, I always enjoyed this match just because it was these fucking teams going against each other. And it didn't matter that it was just Haku in the ring. Haku was kicking some ass. And I'm not a big Haku fan, but, you know, he did well. You know, he kept throwing axe and smash into the turnbuckle to get some headbutts from Andre. So, you know, he wasn't doing too much, but still he was being active in the match. And one thing I found interesting, most matches for this Mania were under 10 minutes, and this was no exception to it all. And basically the only action Andre really got was at the end when Heenan was blaming him for the loss. How do you feel about that?
All right, it's what Bobby Heenan did. When guys did it with Orndorff, he did it with Hercules. He did it with Andre. They needed another face, so that's what they did.
Did the fucking Tully Blanchard, too.
Most certainly did. Well, Blanchard did it to himself, failing a drug test, but that's beside the point. The connection breaks up. Let's see. I hate when I turn the page and I'm skip ahead.
Oh, while you turn the page, I'll break it down how it ends. Andre grabs Smash, holds the arms back. Haku accidentally sabot kicks him. Demolition hits a double, you know, stun gun on Haku. I don't remember what their tag team name was in the magazines. Was it the Decapitator?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they laying the dude on his knee, elbow dropping him, new tag team champions. And from there, fucking Heenan gives Andre the business, slaps him. Audience just hushed for that one. Andre just grabs Heenan, backhands him. And then, faces Haku, grabs the super kick, chops the shit out of this dude. I wonder how Haku felt about getting chopped by Andre. You know, we all know Haku's like a tough dude, but how did he feel taking those chops? Did that even hurt that dude?
I think if a 7-foot, 500-pound man put his big mitts on you, you'd feel it.
Well, I'm not Haku. I'm talking about Haku's perspective.
Haku was a badass. We didn't know the legend of Haku back then. His savate kicks were the shit back in the day, man. That's true. So that ends at 9:30. So, I mean, again, and Andre, I like how Andre, the best part of it was he didn't let them go in the little mini ring.
Yeah, they were trying to hightail it, and then he just throws their ass out of the cart, and they Andre scoots on out to the entrance way.
I enjoyed the match. Did you enjoy the match?
Yeah, it was exciting. I loved it. Even though it wasn't, you know, like the wrestling challenge match that they had, which, you know, where they won the belts. you know, Andre was a bit more involved into that match. That one, I enjoyed that one out of you know, their series of matches. But this one was still exciting, even though, you know, Andre wasn't too involved in it.
I'm playing it now, and as I'm playing it now on mute, I got the chat room. I look over the chat room while you're talking, and Axel just said, and Heenan does do it. He's like, he yells at Andre, "I'm your fucking boss." And, like, I'm looking at Bobby Heenan right now, and he's actually – that you can actually say that. That's what he's saying.
Huh.
So that's pretty cool. I just – thank you for pointing that out to me. I was – actually, I'm watching it as you're looking at it. I'm like, this is great. Yeah, he does say that, though. And the camera does pick it up, so. So it's a little things when you go back and watch certain things. You know, it's pretty cool that we can do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving right along, Earthquake defeats the Mighty Hercules. Nothing really great about this match.
Well, Hercules is trying to go for the torture rack on Earthquake.
Yeah, that was his doom. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for, you know, for a big man, he can, Earthquake can move, man. He was agile.
Yeah. And they, well, I remember this was, you know, this was before Earthquake had his, spat with, Hogan. I'm sure, Tony C was crying and sending letters to Hulk Hogan to get that friendship, bracelet.
We got to get Tony C to call in tonight.
But I loved how when Earthquake was doing the Earthquake Splash, like, all these dudes were, like, going to the hospital. They were saying on the broadcast that, like, he had sent 28 men to the hospital via the Earthquake Splash.
Yeah. So he gets the win at 4 minutes and 52 seconds. I wrote nothing really great, just a filler match. Then he go back to the Rona Barrett interviewing Miss Elizabeth. And where you been? Where you been? Oh, you know, I've been around and nah, like, you know, whatever. Like, nobody. I mean, they're trying to get some gossip out of Elizabeth, and Miss Elizabeth's too classy for your gossip, Rona Barrett.
Oh, it's kayfabe. It's kayfabe. What the fuck's she gonna say?
Again, I was a teenager. You know, I'm like, oh, what's going on?
Where's Elizabeth been?
Shout out to Lex Luger in the rack. He says Tony C's got some.
Listen, Tony C, this is Hercules. Give a shout-out to Hercules in the torture rack.
Hercules Hernandez.
Yeah, man. Get it right.
All right.
Get your Lex Luger-loving Lex Express ass out of here.
You want to talk about Brutus Beefcake's biggest win of his career or what?
Yeah, well, I love some – well, before we get into that, I love some of the stupid puns that they were saying in, like, some of these interviews. Like, you know, Mean Gene with the Colossal Connection called them the Colostomy Connection and said they're anything but – regular guys. And Sean Mooney's interviewing fucking Beefcake, and he finishes it off by saying, "Cutting remarks from Brutus the Barber Beefcake."
Stupid. But I mean, it was, you know,
it was the 90s, early 90s.
Yeah.
But this was an awesome match. Perfect versus Beefcake. I always forget about this match, that this was her, this was, you know, the, you know, the WWF accepted first loss of Mr. Perfect. But Beefcake was over. You know, he was getting Intercontinental title shots. He was always in the picture for possibly being, you know, like the number two face. Well, number three with fucking Warrior at this point. But Beefcake was always – he was always over when he was the Barber.
Because he was Hogan's boy. I wasn't a big
fan.
Not
just Hogan's boy. It didn't matter if he was Hogan's boy.
Well,
the fans loved him cutting people's hair.
I know you loved it because you were 7 years old. But
yeah,
you know. But I wasn't a big fan of Beefcake. I liked him better as a tag team wrestler.
Well, you were like 30 when this came out, so of course you weren't all into this stuff.
You're a dick. I was like 15. So I don't know. He beats Perfect. And Beefcake was the first person to beat Mr. Perfect in a televised match, ending Perfect's very lengthy undefeated streak on television, you know?
Yeah.
Mr. Perfect
had... It was like over a year at this point.
Well, he had been beaten on house shows before Mania.
Yeah, but those... You know,
But they weren't televised, and they broke kayfabe. They didn't break kayfabe.
Nah.
So his TV record was absolutely perfect. But this catapults Mr. Perfect anyway, because...
Speaking of which, he got catapulted in that fucking...
into the steel post, yeah.
Steel post.
He did.
But that's how he lost.
But him losing, actually...
See, the 90s are rubbing off on you, Phil.
I love the 90s. yeah, man. This actually, no pun intended, catapulted Mr. Perfect a couple of months ago.
Doing great job.
Yeah.
guy with those puns.
Exactly. It wasn't a bad match, even though I don't like Brutus Beefcake. It was a good match. You know, it was. I think the best part of the whole match was the genius trying to steal the shears.
And he already got his hair cut by Beefcake, so he got the rest of it cut by him again.
And this is, again, this is the 90s. This is before Supercuts. So it was a thing where, all right, well, they don't have, you don't have to go to, like, Supercuts or those, what's that place that my wife goes to when she lets the students cut her hair? What the hell's the name of that place? Now I'm drawing a blank. But it's like a hair cutting school. And the girls are all in there, they're training, and, you know, you can go in there for a fraction of the price. You can go in there and get a haircut, and you know the girls get to practice. So
yeah.
that's what Beefcake was doing. So
yeah, well, you know, when you're a wrestler, you got to have a plan B.
Right, you have to have a backup plan if you want to cut hair. Yeah. If that's your thing, you want to strut and cut.
If you want to snort crack on the MTA, you know, you got to have that as your backup plan.
All right, let's move right along. We talked about this match a few weeks ago with Bad News Brown.
Yes.
Fighting Piper and the infamous blackface.
A black-on-black crime in the ring.
Yeah, it was – I mean, whatever. We spoke about the match already, so I really – it's not really – no, it wasn't Barbizon, Big Tone. My wife – you know what? I'm going to – I don't want to leave the show and go ask her, but she – I forget the name. She just went like a few weeks ago. Anyway, so they battle to a count out. Piper's dressed like half Al Jolson, half Piper.
And he's using that illegal Michael Jackson glove during the match, which, like, Gorilla Monsoon was like, he's got an envelope.
Right. He's
got... What the hell?
What the hell, yeah.
Why would a wrestler have an envelope? I have to nail this.
So they battle to a double count out, and I wrote my notes.
Cracking up here in Bad News Brown, you know, like they had like the video package before the match starts, you know, going through the history between these two guys. And there was one Bad News Brown line that he said. He's like, said to Piper, if you're going to wear that skirt, make sure to shave those bony legs. And Piper jumps him after that. I just love shit like that. And, you know, it was just like two guys that just hated each other. They couldn't say, you know, what we all want to say on TV. And just the pure cheesiness of this all was great. But I want to ask the fans that are listening to this, and even you, Phil, were you offended by seeing Piper with, you know, half black, half white? Was that a problem for you?
No.
Was that a problem for the fans?
Wait, before I finish it was Paul Mitchell. That's the school. Paul Mitchell. That's the place where my wife goes and gets a haircut once in a while to help the girls out. Okay, I'm sorry. No. I didn't have a problem with the blackface.
I didn't have a problem with it. When I was a kid, I thought it was funny. Like, I didn't think of, like, oh, he's trying to hate on Bad News Brown for being black. Like, I could tell he was poking fun at him. But, you know, I didn't think it was anything serious.
Right. No, it was cool. And
Piper was fucking off the wall, and he was like a cokehead. So
Piper was so burnt out. Like at the show Dave and I were at, he was just spitting off like stuff he said 30 years ago from like They Live, yeah. And that's all he did. That was his shtick.
Well, of course, Tony C's offended because he's black.
Oh, stop it, stop! I'm from North Brooklyn. I was the whitest kid on my block for 10 years.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Piper was like, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and then he kind of like forgot what the next line was, and a few minutes later he's like, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
And now he's old.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He looked alright in my opinion.
He looked decent. He wasn't. I'm not going to totally shit on him. Tony C says it was just as bad as Yardbird. Easy killer. Easy. All right.
Oh, wait up. Wait a second, there's a Piper drunk story after Mania at the airport when he was still in black, you know, half black.
Mr. X, if you know that story,
pass it along to us. We want to share it on the air.
Why don't you call in with that? 718-878-6394.
That number is?
718-878-6394. All right. There you go. All right, Dave, get into the next match.
The next match is... Oh, we got Steve Allen in the shower with the Bolsheviks.
With the Bolsheviks, yeah, I had that on there.
I get no kicks from Ukraine.
And they were flipping out.
They were like
flipping out. That was so funny.
And I thought it was so, you know, cliche that it all ended with like a toilet flushing and everybody yelling at each other.
It's awesome.
But, you know, no more stalling, Phil. Let's get into the next match, which was.
Wow, we're full of puns today, huh?
Yeah.
Don't bother dialing, boys. We're off the hook.
Yeah. Hart Foundation versus the Bolsheviks, and, you know, history repeats itself from the wrestling classic as the Hart Foundation beat them in, like, 20 seconds with a Pearl Harbor job and the heart attack.
Oh, no, the wrestling classic was when Dynamite Kid Super Drop kicked Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah, but they beat them in like 20 seconds.
Right. It was a tournament match in the wrestling classic.
Yes, you know, singing that fucking national anthem is having these guys, you know, get the loser's share of the pay, which isn't good.
I don't know. I mean, whatever. It was 19 seconds, filler match as we call it in WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Good match. I mean, this whole card was good, dude. I'm sorry.
And what I thought was interesting was, you know, Hart Foundation were cited on air as the number one contenders. And Demolition addressed them as, you know, if they win the match, they're going against the Hart Foundation, which would lead into SummerSlam 90.
Right.
So anyway, Mean Gene has an interview with Chito Santana.
Yeah, he's like,
says he will survive.
Yeah, he'll beat the Barbarian, the newest acquisition to the Heenan family.
Which, I, you know, this match with Chito Santana and the Barbarian, I thought it was great just for the body's commentary on Chico the entire time. Saying that Chico's music reminds him of, you know, the Blue Note Club in Tijuana. And the best part was him like talking about like, you know, how the Barbarian react if served up some of Chico's food before the match. Have Chico's revenge, like
instead of Montezuma, yeah.
Yeah, Chico's revenge.
Pretty funny. All right, so yes,
if he ever ate one of Chico's enchiladas.
Another point that they brought out: this is Santana's been involved in every WrestleMania until then.
Yeah.
So.
Up until nine. Nine was the last one.
Nine was his last one, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Barbarian beats him with at 4 minutes and 33 seconds. You know, it is what it is. It's Tito Santana. You know, he's there.
You know, at this point, like, he was still great. He could still go, but, you know, we talked about this on, you know, past episodes, even with the question with Rick Martel as, you know, never being a singles champion. There were just too many, like, great guys on the card, you know, regardless of what the year was. There's only so many championships. You know, each guy's getting, like, a decent run with each belt. You know, there's hardly any transitional champions. Like, it's tough for these guys to excel, you know, further than where they were. And, you know, Chico, the guy's done it all with the exception of the World Championship. So, you know, how can the guy really complain?
Right. All right. Well, I mean, again, I never had a problem with Santana. Santana actually held his own, and Dave just put him over again, like you mentioned. But he looked like he was going to win at one point. He hit his flying burrito.
Yeah.
And poor Chico didn't, and then Bobby put his foot on the rope, and that was the end of that. So,
yeah.
All right. Your next match was probably next to the Hogan match, my favorite match of the night. For obvious reasons, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, the Common Man with Sweet Sapphire, versus the team of Randy Savage, the Macho King Randy Savage, and the Sensational, yes, One Queen Sherry, the first ever mixed tag team intergender tag team match at WrestleMania.
You got that right.
This was so good, man. This was so good, and it told a really good story.
Crown Jewel, baby.
I got the Crown Jewel, Mean Gene. And Sean Mooney, I mean. Sean Mooney's like, what is he talking about? I don't know. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. So the match progresses. A lot of outside interference. I mean, obviously, Sapphire can't work. And
hey, she did a good butt bump during the match.
No, she did. And she did a couple. All she did was drag Sherry.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sherry, who's a world-class athlete, professional wrestler.
Taking a world-class beating from Dusty Rhodes and Hulk Hogan and everybody, every top star of the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, so, and Sherry can go. You know, as much as I shit on women's wrestling, you know, Sherry can go. And
yeah.
She dealt with that good. Sapphire couldn't, you know, whatever.
Hey, Sapphire did that airplane spin.
Yeah, that, I guess that's the one move she actually learned. But, you know, how awesome is Dusty Rhodes, dude? Like, the ultimate showman. You know what I'm saying? Blue Eye Thor, Dusty Rhodes, the common man with the polka dots, if you will.
Yeah.
Good match. The crown jewel, obviously, what they were referring to is Miss Elizabeth. And Liz comes out and helps Dusty and Sapphire win the match to pretty much police Sherry from going crazy. And that's pretty much it. I mean, Dave, you have any more notes on it? Or?
You know, the only thing I was going to bring up, and, you know, Axel Foley's totally beating me to the punch with all these great quotes. And I just love fucking Ventura going off on them. You know, what's it? Sapphire and Rhodes comes out. And he said, you know, they're announced at 465. And,
oh, yeah, he goes.
It's like they're
Sapphire's 250, he says.
Yeah. Like, you're telling me Rhodes is only 200 pounds? Because I know damn well Sapphire weighs 2.5.
It's 250. It's awesome. I totally forgot about that. Shout out to the chat room.
Yeah.
I love this shit, man. You guys are awesome. You make Dave and I's job so much better. We're having so
actually, it was, you know, luckily for Axel writing the whole fucking intro to WrestleMania, because I was going to do that myself. I was like, shit, he did it already. Let me just read off of that.
I got a replacement. When you do your Virgil show, I can fucking bring Axel on.
Yeah, well, he'll probably want to do a Virgil episode, too.
You guys can do it together. How about that?
He knows how to spell man.
All right, your next match, the tag team specialists who never won a belt in the WWF anyway. Rock is fighting Sato and Tanaka.
The
Orient Express. They actually defeated the Rockers. This was a good match.
Count out.
Yeah, good match. Almost.
The Rumble was it? Rumble 91 match was better between these two guys.
But it wasn't Sato, right?
It was Paul Diamond.
It was Paul Diamond, the Bad Company, yeah.
Kato
and Tanaka, right? Yeah. You actually corrected me. I thought it was Sato.
Yeah.
This was Sato, and but either way, I mean, Tanaka and Paul Diamond were a good team. Sato's a good wrestler. This was a good match.
It was decent. It wasn't all that great.
No, it was tag team specialists.
And, you know, one thing I didn't understand was, you know, Piper is wearing that illegal envelope or the Michael Jackson glove, and Marty and Sean are both wearing those illegal envelope / Michael Jackson gloves in the ring, punching these guys. Why weren't they disqualified from the match or, you know, banned from ringside? What do you got to say to that, Phil?
I don't know.
You know, men should stop wearing those Michael Jackson envelope gloves to the fucking match. All I got to say about this.
All right there, fucking Captain Time Machine, relax.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but one thing you neglected was the Hogan Warrior promos before the Rockers match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Warrior one. Well, the one that they did for the pre-show was decent. I don't know if the pre-show didn't get to play the whole thing.
I got to watch the pre-show. I didn't have any time to watch the pre-show, but
I got it on MP3. It was cool. I played it during like the last 20 minutes before we started.
Good.
So I got that down to a science now.
Hogan brings out the old school. This is where the power lies, pointing to the center of his hand. I don't know what the hell that means, but like it was so over the top. Like Hogan's like, "Do you want to live forever?" And like. Tell a warrior to breathe his last breath into his body and that him and all the Hulkamaniacs can save him. And then, like, throws it out at the fucking end, like, I sure hope you're a good loser. And then tells him Hulkamania is going to destroy him.
That was good. Like I mentioned last week, sometimes the warrior makes sense.
Yeah. The warrior one was off the hook. He just throws fucking Mooney to the side and says, "You're just a normal." And so you don't deserve to breathe the same air as that me and Hulk Hogan breathe. It's oh man, I love these promos. And he says like Hulk Hogan's name like, I don't know, like 70 times and during this promo.
Yeah, he snarls. It's,
like when I was a kid watching this, I couldn't wait to get to this fucking match. I couldn't wait for the shitty Orient Express matches, the shitty Coco Beware matches to be done with. I couldn't wait for the fucking arena to implode on itself with the action that was about to go down.
All right, well, we're almost there, Killer. We're almost there. Jim Duggan beats Dino Bravo, Dave's favorite Canadian wrestler.
Steve Allen with Rhythm and Blues.
Oh, yeah, dude. How awesome was that? How awesome was that?
The one, like, cheap line that, like, got me cracking up was Greg Valentine with, like, you know, like, the one thing that he said was, like, you know, they're headed to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Allen replies, okay, saying, okay, I'll warn him when you're coming.
All right, DiBiase putting up the $1 million belt with Virgil against Jake the Snake Roberts. Again, one of the better two guys in business that can work.
For the $1 million title.
Yeah, again, nothing bad about DiBiase and Jake Roberts. They always put on a good show.
Yeah. Well, I was disappointed that there was, what did this match end with, a count out?
Yeah, yeah.
Because these guys had, like, great matches on the house shows. They even had a great no DQ match at Madison Square Garden. Jake hits the fucking DDT, legit. Like, no stalling or any kind of stuff like that, because the guy was great with psychology with that, like, just teasing the DDT. But for a lot of these top guys, like DiBiase, it was always rare for him to fucking hit it on the dude and pin him. Like, he had matches with Perfect, wasn't able to get the gold, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I was a little disappointed that, you know, there wasn't a clean finish, but they needed to get the belt back on Ted DiBiase. You know, it was in Jake the Snake's fucking snake bag, fucking slimy and greasy. Because the real belt itself is worth a decent chunk of change.
Right. Not the one that Virgil had at the show.
No, not the
not the one he made from the
dollar highspots.com.
Yeah.
You know, deal. Even though we're not hyping High Spots, but you could probably get it on there anyway.
Welcome.
But you know, again, fucking Ventura, the genius that he is. Putting over that this is a non-sanctioned WWF belt, and you can win it by any means. You can win it by countout. You can win it by disqualification, as well as pinfall and submission.
Yeah, dude. And that DDT on DiBiase, he ate that, bro.
Yeah,
he ate that DDT.
Yeah,
he ate that DDT. All right. Let's see. Let's move right along. All right, Big Boss Man fighting Akeem. Another filler match.
Yeah, I wanted more out of this. You know, these guys were a team, and the Twin Towers, they had a history together. They almost defeated the Mega Powers, and you know, this match was just kind of like a real like flash in the pan, like just what was it? What did my notes say? You know, just got the fucking Big Boss Man slam, the spine buster. That's it.
Yeah.
What's three?
You know what? This is just a case of trying to get everybody on the card.
Yeah. There was like how many matches? Like 14 matches.
Yeah.
That's a lot for Mania, whether it's 3 or 4 hours, whatever. That's a lot of matches.
They average 10 to 12. They used to anyway. The average. I mean, you've had
14
before.
Yeah, they try to get as much as they could on
right.
the card.
So, I mean, the Rick Rude, Bobby Heenan, Snooker match was longer, almost 4 minutes. So, again,
and Steve Allen joined them on commentary for that.
What's that?
Steve Allen joined them on commentary.
If you guys are into nostalgia, into the like the stuff that from the 50s and 60s, check out anything from Steve Allen. He had his own variety show. That dude is hysterical. He was on the Dean Martin show. I have a whole bunch of Dean Martin stuff. Every top performer back in the day had like some kind of variety show. Sonny and Cher, Donnie Marie, the Jackson 5, Ozzy and Harriet, Steve Martin, Steve Allen. They all had variety shows.
Yeah.
Check out anything with Steve. Steve Allen's a funny dude. So, and he was way past his prime here, and he was still funny.
Yeah, getting those zingers on the fucking Bolsheviks.
All right, 718-878-6394. We're at the main event.
Wait a second. You're not talking about the Rhythm and Blues performance, live performance.
Do we have to? Yeah. I guess so.
Great Hammer Valentine's, you know, rock debut.
Okay.
Strumming that guitar.
Yes, they play their debut hit. What was it called?
Honky Love.
Honky Love, that's right.
But my favorite part was when Sean Mooney goes up to Mary Tyler Moore asking her about, like, oh, are you looking forward to the performance by Rhythm and Blues? And she's just, like, dumbfounded, has no idea what the fuck is going on. And she's like, sure. And then he continues this god-awful interview saying, so who does the honky-tonk man remind you of? And she's just like a deer in fucking headlights, doesn't know what to say, and just like, just big, that big ass mouth of hers just like open wide. And Sean Mooney, God bless his soul, like, oh, Johnny Cash, you know, Elvis. And she's like, yes, you're exactly right. And then fucking goes again with Greg the Hammer Valentine, and she's just like, yes, it reminds me of Elvis. And then we had the performance. Amazing performance, by the way, by the Honky Tonk Man.
Really? It was amazing? I didn't even follow the fucking music. They
Yeah, we were talking about like how great WrestleMania and wrestling is as a performance, and you were talking about music, so I'm surprised you're not into this.
Because I've known bands that lip-sync better than that, man. I mean, Milli Vanilli lip-sync better than the Honky Tonk Man.
And Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yeah, I don't count him as a performer.
Actually, the backup singers were pretty fucking awful.
Yeah, that's true.
Like they weren't in sync or anything like that. And
if I had to pick one bad thing about this pay-per-view, about this event, it was that. I mean, if I had to. The entire car was great.
Yeah, what about the limo driver, the pink Cadillac driver?
What about him? Wasn't that, what's his face? Diamond Dallas Page?
You know how he got the gig?
He mentioned it on that Legends show, I believe. It wasn't Michael Hayes. It was I fucking forgot, dude. I know this because I just watched one of the documentaries and he mentioned it. Go ahead, remind me. I'm sorry.
I don't remember who the dude was that got him in, but basically he had that was his car. That was his pink Cadillac.
Right.
And you know he had some wrestling connections. I know he worked. He was like bouncing with Bigelow too at some point in time. I don't know.
He ran a club.
Yeah.
Now, but wasn't Peggy Sue? Wasn't Peggy Sue Sherry Martel for a while?
And sometimes it was Jimmy Hart.
And Jimmy Hart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Depending on the show, but anyway, but yeah, you know, Diamond Dallas Page, you know, had that opportunity to drive the car, and he, you know, even then he wanted to be a wrestler, and I think not too long after he was in WCW, you know, as Diamond Dallas Page, but that was his big WrestleMania moment. Because I don't think anybody really remembers that European title match that he had at, what was it, like 19 or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good match, but...
Yeah, it was good.
It was better as him being the fucking pink Cadillac driver.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. All right, so now can we talk about the Ultimate Challenge? Are you ready for the Ultimate Challenge?
I'm ready.
All right, 718-878-6394. I know you animals want to call in.
Yeah, I know Tony C's got something to get off his chest.
Yeah, Tony C, I know he's butthurt. I tried to soften the blow today. I sent him a picture on Facebook.
Yeah, right. 24 years of butthurt.
Anyway.
He still has some sleepless nights over this match.
Unbelievable. All right, so this is the Ultimate Challenge. Let me paint this picture before we get into it. I had watched that at a friend's house, and I was probably the only person on my block in a 5-block radius in my school, my junior high school, that was convinced that the Ultimate Warrior was winning the belt. No one thought, this is for real. Like, people were like legit talking about it, like in school, in the grocery store, on Warner Wolf, on the sports network, if you're local on Channel 2 here in New York. Everybody was talking about the Ultimate Challenge.
Yes.
I, out of everybody, my friends, family, the mailman, Angelo, shout out to him. He's dead now. He was old back then. Even Angelo was like, oh, Hulkamania is going to win. I'm like, you're crazy, dude. You're crazy. The Warrior's taking this belt.
And there was a lot of friendships ended in the schoolyard because of this.
Oh, hell. Oh, Tony C's calling in. Here we go. All
right.
What's the matter, baby boy? You butt hurt? What's the matter?
What's going on, Phil?
Tony C is in the building, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, Tony C?
Another night in Hollywood land here. You guys are pulling up this archaic, slanted pay-per-view known as...
Tony, I was just painting the picture of my neighborhood at the time, and not even, and I can't even exaggerate about this. No one, I mean, like, I'm talking school teachers, my mailman, my family, my friends in school, the people I went to their house to watch it with, no one was convinced that the Ultimate Warrior could pull it off and win the belt. I was the only one.
I don't know. Well, on my end, I had a lot of friends that were like, they were sick of Hulkamania. They were ready for it to die in that ring that night. And there was a lot of Ultimate Warrior supporters too, as well as Hulkamania, you know, Hulk Hogan supporters for this. It was like, it was really split down the middle from my experience.
Right. Now, so now I go to my friend's house and it was like, like Dave mentioned before, dude, it was like, you know, people didn't care about the other 13 matches. They just wanted to see what was going on, you know? They wanted to see the Ultimate Challenge. Now, being a Hulkamaniac, Tony C, now, how old were you when this came out? Unless you don't want to reveal your age.
I had just turned 7, I believe. 80, oh, yeah. I was just had turned 7, so.
All right, so I was about 15, 14 years old I was at this point. So now...
And like I tell a lot of people, I think this, after this is when Hulkamania took a nosedive, you know, it got started wearing off.
I don't think
some people don't agree with me, but
I mean,
the magic wasn't there like it used to be.
No, and
exactly.
Right, but there's a reason why though, because it's not 1984 anymore.
He lost it to a guy that he was like kind of like Goldberg-ish. Before Goldberg, you know, like Lee loves to say how Ultimate Warrior beat, you know, Andre the Giant before his theme music went off. I'm like, that kind of gimmick crap like that. That, no, I mean, I wasn't into that, man. Come on.
Now, but let me ask you, though, you know how WCW pretty much force fed us Bill Goldberg?
Yeah. And it was kind of like the same thing.
All right. Well, I don't know if they force fed us the Ultimate Warrior.
I didn't feel I was force-fed the Ultimate Warrior.
I knew as a kid that his skills were limited. And I knew as a kid, like, he was like the next big thing. Where WWE, and we talked about this last week with the whole Cena thing, was like they knew they had something with him marketable. And to Hogan's credit, I rarely give him credit. To Hogan's credit, I thought he did the right thing for business by putting this guy over. Because at the time, he was super hot. He was white hot, dude.
But at the same time, look how he didn't stay that way. Like, once he won the belt, it was like,
Well, because
that's why they took it off him.
Well, they took it off of him because of him, not because of his gimmick. Because he was an asshole. And I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. All
right.
An asshole. The guy wanted to get paid his fair share. He wanted to get paid Hogan money because he was on top, like
right,
Hogan.
But here's the deal with that, too.
Hogan was on top for years.
Exactly. Now, you could negotiate your contract. Okay? This dude went out and hijacked pay-per-views. And it's not, and that's the thing too. It's like, you know, the locker room is the locker room, you know, and all the guys there are there for two reasons. They're there to entertain us, and of course they want to get paid. Obviously, they're entertainers. That's what they do. Okay, My feeling about now, when you watch the DVD about the Warrior, you know, Pete, they all they did was poo-poo on him. That's all they did. And a lot of guys did get along with him. A lot of guys did work with him well.
Yes.
It was him, but the character was so over that they, you know, wrestling needed the next thing.
But at the same time, Phil, this guy, he was the champion at SummerSlam and said, "I'm not going out."
You're right. Dude, again.
You know what I mean?
Well, he wasn't the champion at SummerSlam. Hogan was the champion.
Hogan was the champion at SummerSlam.
At SummerSlam 90?
Oh, no, he won.
It was 91 where he
threw. It was 91. Okay. I thought he was the champion.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Again, you know, they tried to recreate a different version of Hulkamania. Let's be honest. It's what they don't want to do now with Cena. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to recreate another C-Nation. They wanted to recreate another version of Hulkamania, and they did.
Well, this was the thing at the time, and, you know, I was on Tony C's, you know, side at the time. I wanted Hogan to win. Hogan was still the guy. Warrior was like, you know, he was, you know, gaining – he was breathing down Hogan's neck, but, you know, as a fan of Hogan at the time, like, the guy could still go.
Right.
And obviously, for the future manias, he was still there.
That match was 34 minutes? It was 24, something like that. I know it was a good lengthy match. Hmm. And, you know, he carried him. You know, the Warrior was limited. I ain't going to say he carried him, but the Warrior was limited in what he can do. So
you can definitely tell that match was choreographed. You know, way in advance.
Uh oh, Surfer's calling in. Here we go. Now we're getting a rant reunion. Surfer. Yo. Surfer, you there? I don't know. Guys, you with me?
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
What's up with this guy? Surfer.
What?
You there, brother?
Why are you
the voice? You got?
I don't know. I got him connected. I don't know what's up. I don't know. All right. Try to call back, hurt. Surfer.
We were hurt after this one, man. Cause you didn't see it coming, you know. At 7 years old, you don't see Hulk Hogan losing like that.
Yeah.
No, it was just it was almost impossible.
Yeah.
And then once he lost to him, it's like it started the downward spiral. Like the Warrior got the belt, Hogan never got back into the title picture until what? The next year, the Rumble. He won the Rumble. They kept him away from the belt. Then he got the belt back. And then he freaking lost it to Undertaker. And then, you know, finally got it back from Undertaker, but Tony took it from him, that rap bastard. And then he didn't get it back until, you know, WrestleMania 9. But he lost, like, from what, 90? The 93, he lost like more times than he did in like, what, 5-6 years, that whole run. And it was like, whoa. And Undertaker made him look weak.
It seemed weird.
Go ahead.
It seemed totally weird and out of place. And a lot of the guys that he was losing to, you know, like Undertaker, which was like a 1 week, you know, transitional kind of thing. That it just seems strange. Like, why even go through that with that?
He put him over because you know, he's a new guy, but he looked weak. The Undertaker choked him out on the funeral parlor. I was like, what the heck? And then you know, he's getting beat up by Earthquake. You know, sent to the hospital.
Tony C, did you get your friendship Hulkamania friendship bracelet?
You know, I did not get a friendship bracelet. Okay, no. Dave, you don't have to rub that in. Okay, but I literally, you know, he come out there with the tape ribs, and I was like, I thought he was really hurt by Earthquake, man.
Got the splash on the Brother Love show.
Exactly. I mean, Brother Love and Paul Bearer used to set Hulk Hogan up something serious, man, on those shows. And he was just walking into a trap. Hulk, the Hogan in the beginning would have never did that, but, you know.
All right, well, we're getting away from the Ultimate Challenge.
Let's get into the match.
I'm trying to get you away from it. If
no,
you
know. I appreciate you. Listen, listen, Tony C, in the short time that I've known you, I appreciate your energy, and I appreciate your love for Hulkamania, and I appreciate your wrestling prowess, but we are not taking the task at hand, my friend. Surfer sums up with Surfer's line, so if he comes back on, I'd love to speak to him.
Yeah.
But anyway, so now here's another thing about the Ultimate Challenge, too, is you had two guys that were, you know, I don't want to say limited, because I thought that both guys were, you know, again, we mentioned Hogan's work in Japan, and we mentioned Hogan can actually wrestle. Add me, please, he says.
We're not getting, like, a wrestling clinic in this. We're getting, like, an entertainment match.
This was a five-star match, Dave, outside of the finish.
Hold on a second here. Surfer, you on now?
Yes, I'm on. My Skype was acting up, but I'm okay.
I love your Skype picture, man.
Surfer, man.
What's up, Surfer?
Hey, and this is the first time with Dave, right?
Yeah.
How you doing? Okay. So, I don't know what friends you had growing up, Phil, that they didn't realize that the Ultimate Warrior was going to take that match. I mean, I know Hogan was the hero of millions of kids. He taught people how to say their prayers and eat their vitamins. And, you know, he was the first real superhero.
I had delusional wrestling fans. I did. They were not, I don't want to say delusional, because I'm still friends with them, and they, you know, but I think they weren't hip to the progression of characters. No. They weren't hip to how you and I were hip to it.
The Ultimate Warrior was on such a roll. He was his star was rising so high. I mean, if you'd have told me that he would have lost that belt within that same year, I'd have told you were lying.
Well, again, and that was a great point by Tony bringing it up. And again, it wasn't the character that lost the belt. It was him, the person.
Right.
You know, and he would have, honestly, what bothers me more about the Ultimate Warrior and the Mystique, Surfer, is that he wrote his own ticket. Mm-hmm. He could have been, and I hate to say this, he could have been the next Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
If he was Jay Brown.
And Hogan, you know, everybody thought that he was on his way to Hollywood permanently. I mean, like,
oh yeah, Thunder in Paradise was, they were building a boat for him. You know,
but you know, yeah, you have a Mr. Nanny,
Suburban Commando. Can you want to name all the shitty Hulk Hogan movies? Because I could.
Santa with Muscles.
Just those movies.
Hey! Now don't talk about No Holds Barred like that.
I love No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred is the best.
Yeah.
I actually, when that movie came out, my dad was like, "Do you want to see the new Indiana Jones movie, or do you want to see Hulk Hogan?" I'm like, "I want to see No Holds Barred. Let's go."
I mean, he was getting scripts thrown to him that Arnold was turning down because he didn't have time for him. Because they thought, well, we got Hogan now. But if had a couple of his movies made some money, he wouldn't be in wrestling today.
Yeah, I feel the same way with The Rock too. The Rock got some. He got some shitty scripts, and then he got, you know, the bank. You know what I'm saying? Like that, the same concept.
Yeah.
If he would have did like, you know, seven more Tooth Fairy movies, you know he'd be hanging and banging with John Cena right now, you know, the last couple of years.
So, oh, yeah.
Totally.
No, I mean, no. Do you agree? I mean,
yes. You know, the Tooth Fairy is not as a bad movie as...
Oh, Lord.
No, it's not. I mean...
What's worse, the Tooth Fairy or Mr. Nanny?
Mr. Nanny.
Oh, Mr. Nanny was worse.
Oh, come on, Dad. That was a great character.
Bruce, you guys
wouldn't sit there and tell anybody
that
the Tooth Fairy is a must-see movie. But
it is a former wrestler turned in.
When you compare it to like other bad movies, it's not at the bottom at all. I mean, if you're a kid, you can definitely stomach that movie. And he had just came off The Game Plan. You can't say The Game Plan was a,
no, The Game Plan was good. What was the movie he was –
Game Plan.
No,
he made it through Disney, so he was good on that.
Wait a second, guys. When were we supposed to be talking about the Ultimate Challenge here?
You're right. But real quick,
the Ultimate Challenge.
What was the – stop trying to avoid the topic.
He didn't kick out.
What was the movie The Rock was in when he had a – he's a football player, had to take care of his daughter?
Yeah, the game.
The Game Plan. Okay, that I saw that in the theater. That was a good movie, actually. All right, so Ultimate –
title for title, The Ultimate Challenge.
The Ultimate Challenge. Now, again, I don't know where – you know, again, I had some delusional fans and friends and stuff like that back in the day, but I knew he was winning this title. Now, the match itself – people don't a lot of people kill the match. They critique it to the point where it's like, well, you know, one of the worst main events in WrestleMania history. The hype itself was off the chart,
and it built itself. They didn't even do that much. They just, you know, they collided at the Rumble.
They had
the tag match at Saturday night's main event against Perfect and the Genius, and then they had this. There wasn't that much to it.
Now, I don't know about any other city, but in New York, they even had a fold-out in the newspaper, in the Sunday newspaper, with like a big, you know how they have the cartoon posters?
Mm-hmm.
They had a poster. I was telling Dave before, I don't know if, sir, if you were listening, Warner Wolf was talking about it on a sports update on Channel 2 News. Like, it was all over the news. It was all over the newspapers. It was like, it was the biggest thing since the first WrestleMania. You know? So it was.
Yeah.
I think the hype itself was probably better than the match.
No, I thought the match was great. The way that this match was composed, if you will, was that both men couldn't one up the other. Like, whenever one guy did one thing with a test of strength, the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, the other guy would do it right back to him. One guy would slam him, the other guy would slam him back. Like, there was just kind of like,
who's faster?
Exactly. You couldn't figure out who really had the one up on the other guy. So this was actually, like, in my opinion, it was planned out very well.
Yeah, because usually, like, Hogan be in the ring with a smaller guy, and he'll push him into the corner, then he'll flex. But then the Warrior came back and did him that way.
And
Hogan had that look on his face like, oh, my God, I can't believe he did this to me.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think this is the most hyped main event in WrestleMania?
Wow. Oh, Andre the Giant versus Hogan.
Hogan was – it's a close second.
Andre and Hyde.
Yeah,
Andre and Hogan.
It goes Andre and the Giant and Hogan. It goes Hogan Warrior, Rock Austin, Hogan Rock. Those are the most hyped for me anyway. Unless, you know, you think of anything else, I don't know.
Rock Austin 1 or 2?
The first one.
The first one.
Was at 15, right?
Yeah.
15, yeah.
Yeah, there was some hype to Austin Bret Hart, too. What was that, 13 or 14?
Yeah, that was 13.
Yeah, but not to the degree.
Not to the degree of that. I'm just talking like if you're going to base hype, this is number two in hype next to Andre and Hogan.
Yeah.
Well, Andre and Hogan, that's the most important match in the history of the event.
Of WrestleMania. It's the reason why Vince McMahon has expensive stock in a network, I think, anyway.
I was asking for this match because it was champion versus champion, and you never got to see that.
And face versus face.
Yeah, and face versus face.
You rarely saw a face versus face back then. Somebody always, especially when it involved Hogan.
Yeah.
Always in order to take on Hogan.
Like, the only face versus face match that I remember from like this era was like seeing like a Coco Beware match versus Chico Santana on a Super Tape or something like that.
Yeah,
that was it.
But you know, this sets up a chain of events, like I was telling Dave before, and then and Tony briefly touched on it. You know, he thought this match was the down the downfall of Hulkamania. And I don't know if it's because of the match or it's because of the sign of the times where they were just looking for the next big thing. You know what I'm saying? Or was that just too far-fetched for me to say that 25 years later?
It showed a weakness, just like, you know, I had to bring it up, but in WCW.
Like I said,
No, I was just going to say in WCW when Luger beat Hogan and then lost it in 5 days, it showed that he can be beat. You see what I'm saying?
I think if Hogan concentrated on wrestling and not trying to get into Hollywood, he'd have been a champion a whole lot longer than he was.
Well, that was one of the perks of signing with WCW, though, Surfer, right? Didn't he get, like, a whole bunch, like, he got the TV show, and he got...
He got Thunder in Paradise.
Right, and he got, like, they named, they had the Thunder show, WCW had Thunder, they named it for him, they did it for him. Like, they did a whole bunch of stuff for him.
So, wait, and Thunder was named after Thunder in Paradise?
Yeah.
That's a Hollywood fact that I didn't know.
Yeah,
because that sounds horrible. Because that show was off the air way before that show was even on air.
No, they had they put them on, and Thunder stayed on longer than Thunder in Paradise, but
Thunder didn't come on until '98.
But yeah,
again, it's just, you know, reinventing yourself, and it's now it's the '90s, and now it's you're slowly getting into the live television era. And now it's just another game. So now they're looking for the next big thing. Now here comes the Ultimate Warrior. And the Warrior shot himself in the foot by being a dick. Be honest. I mean, he had the ball. They gave him.
Yeah,
he
had it.
They gave
only defended that title, like, what, twice?
He defended it a lot on house shows. Surfer, are you from the area you live in?
Philly, yeah.
All right, so you did all the whole the Spectrum run, right? Like I did in the Garden?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know, and those cards were pretty much the same thing. Like, if the Warrior beat Andre in the Garden, he would beat him in the Spectrum, except it would be a different finish.
It turns out that, you know, what we thought was genuine wasn't. It was a series of you know, matches that took place everywhere in the territory, and
yeah, because we didn't have access to cable, and when we did, it still, you know what I'm saying, it was like magazines were still, kayfabe was still in effect to an extent,
mm-hmm.
You know, so
you know, because I used to, like, you know, you go down the Spectrum, we get a championship match, yet the title never changed hands here.
No,
it would always change hands in the Garden.
Yeah, I never saw a title change in the Garden unless it was a pay-per-view. The first title change I saw in the Garden was Honky Tonk Man to the Warrior in 88.
Like they would give us the tag team titles. That's the title we would see change hands.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I know the Valentine and Beefcake won it there. Well, didn't the IC title, Santana and Valentine do it in the Spectrum? I'm not sure. I have to look that up.
Don't remember.
Yeah, I have to look that up.
Wasn't that in Boston?
Might have been. No, that was Santana and Savage. Savage beat him in the Boston Garden. I know that. But anyway, the point is that this was the turning point of WWF right now. This match set the tone for a lot of things. And again, I don't think it was a bad match. If you know,
this was a fantastic. In my opinion, this was a fantastic match. I know Tony C's got a different opinion that he kicked out and all this other kind of bullshit, but he laid down for the three count.
That's not bullshit, Dave. He kicked out. Two losses. He lost at big pay per view. He lost the Warrior. He kicked out, and then he beat Sting at Starrcade 97.
I'll give you the Starrcade. Real quick.
He beat Sting. I agree with that.
Yeah, that was a normal count. That wasn't a fast count. Well, Tony C, what did you think about the Halloween Havoc rematch?
Okay, don't bring up the fireball, okay? That didn't go off how I was supposed to go off. But we got our win back nonetheless. You know,
our win back.
Yeah, I mean, because that's Hollywood. Then when he was Hollywood, I was all in. Then I'm like, yo, I was pissed. I was still kind of pissed he lost to Goldberg back in July. I was trying to figure out why the hell that happened, but
when you saw the Halloween Havoc match, did like a weight like feel like lifted from your chest after all those years?
Hell no, because I still picture him leaving on that dog on what's the thing called? And he's looking like a sad puppy and the Ultimate Warrior sitting there with all the belts. I'm like, ain't this about upset?
Hey, man, at least Hogan did the right thing.
Oh, he did what's best for business, really?
Yeah.
At the time,
and
you know,
but people give him so much crap, but, you know, he put people over like the Warrior, Goldberg, Sting at Starrcade and at freaking Super Brawl. Me, myself, a lot of times I've been thinking them bums need to be put over at the time. I mean, they were bigger than him, so Luger, he put Luger over, and people like to give Flair never put Luger over. As much as we give Ric Flair praise and glory and all that, Luger never beat him for the belt.
But why would anyone want to put over Lex Luger?
But Hogan did it, though. You get what I'm saying? People, he put Yoko over. He put Taker over. You know,
and then like got the belt back from Luger like a week later.
Of course he's going to get the belt back. But he let him win. He let him get a, you know, sip. The Goldberg one really, you know, not to get off something. That really requires my opinion. And we never got our win back against Goldberg. And Yoko, we need to get our win back because we beat him first.
Hollywood Hogan,
we all in. Goldberg, that's the only loss that kind of sticks out of my crow, my throat, in my side.
Tony, how many vitamins is left in your bottle?
I mean, that's Hulkamania. I don't care now. I'm talking about Hollywood Hulk Hogan lost to Goldberg.
Vitamins. So how many you got left?
I got a few left for Goldberg and Sting. I mean, those two, Starrcade and Super Brawl, come on, man.
Surfer, what did you think about the match, the Ultimate Challenge? What did you think about the match itself?
At the time, we thought it was exciting. I mean, thinking back, technically it wasn't that great, but, I mean, you had the two most popular guys going at it, and you rarely saw that in wrestling. So, and, you know, we got the win we wanted. We wanted the Warrior to come out on top because we just thought he was going to be the man for a long time. And
it's great because you and I are around the same age, and these two knuckleheads are around the same age.
Knuckleheads.
So, yeah, exactly.
Knuckleheads.
Yeah, so, like, I think the contrast right now, the contrast of the conversation, you know, it varies. And when you talk to people, you know, who saw it back then, and then you look at it back now, like, I watched it twice since Dave and I were going to talk about it. And I tried to poo-poo on it. I tried to, you know, pick out all the... I was going to do all the flaws, like, oh, they, you know, did this, did that, you know. But, again, at the time, it was exciting. Then I got caught up in it again. Like, I'm watching it, and I'm 15 again. You know, I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is great. Seriously.
So, Phil, did you have a box back then?
Yeah. But you know what, though? I had the scrambler? Yeah, well, I didn't have cable in my house. I didn't get it till that year, later that year. My neighborhood had cable. I didn't get cable until the summer of 90. But I would go to a friend's house, and he had, you know, hot box. They call it Phil Purview back then. Because we'd bring the box to my friend's house, and we'd jack it up, and we'd have Phil Purview.
Good old the scrambler box.
Yeah, man.
I remember that. The press conference, the contract signing, I just see Tony in the background.
I sent Tony a picture on the Rampage today. He wrote on the take, Tony.
Tony was crooked as the letter S, man. He took the belt from Hogan like it was nothing.
Tony laughed all the way to the bank because Vince bought out his dad's territory up there. That's why they had all those matches up at Maple Leaf Gardens after 84.
But this is the thing. Taker beat Hogan with shenanigans. Hogan beat Taker with shenanigans, and he took the belt from Hogan.
It's like, true. Come on. You're on a freaking tape. You freaking, it was all a ploy to get Slater built.
You know,
that's why things on the tape.
Tunney was considered a terrible president by all sides. I mean,
he is terrible.
I thought his gimmick was supposed to be a terrible president, right?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
He was the one that took the belt. He was the one that took the belt from Andre, right? From DiBiase.
Because Vince didn't own the company. He was just a commentator.
Yeah.
He was just a peon.
I mean, DiBiase did the smart thing. He paid Andre to give him the belt. What was wrong with that? You can't do that.
In the ring. You got a pin or submission.
Yeah, I mean, it was
a $1 million man. That was a gimmick.
All right, so
I don't know how your world works, Tony C, but I don't just hand out championship belts to people.
Hey, ask Triple H how I feel. Then bitch off hand him a belt. Here you go. There you go.
All right, listen, I want to ask a question before we start wrapping it up because it's about that time. But I want to – let's say the Warrior was a team player, right? Let's say he was a company guy. Hogan gives him – Hogan puts him over. He has the belt. If he's a team player and he's not a dick and holding out for money and he's not, you know, not being able to work with certain guys, because he had good matches with Rick Rude and Randy Savage, and, you know, he had good matches with Mr. Perfect. If he was a company guy, would he have gone as big as Hogan?
Not crossover wise, I mean, wrestling wise.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No, yes, maybe?
Just wrestling wise, yeah.
Wrestling wise, yes. Crossover wise, no. I mean,
because he did movies. He actually had the same agent as Arnold. But the movies that he was doing, and actually one of the guys posted one of them, like a clip from it while we were talking, and dude's film career never really lifted off. You know, he was just a great, character wrestler.
Listen, Hogan, he could go on the Tonight Show, sit down, he'd do his little Hogan spiel, but then he could talk normal.
Yeah, Warrior couldn't do that. So Hogan was more marketable, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of the ring.
I don't know what they were doing with if they even did like a Make-A-Wish foundation gig with Warrior. I wonder how that would go down.
He'd be press slamming cripple kids, man. Let's be honest.
No, the kids would have loved Ultimate Warrior.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I don't know. I guess that's it. I mean, it's WrestleMania 6. It's top to bottom. It was a stack card. And really, I mean, anything else, anything we want to add to that to heighten the room and, get us going for the next one? Or anything, any closing thoughts from my partner Mega Powers there?
You know, only thing that I can really complain about this match was, you know, Hogan was selling the leg at the first, and then he just drops all of that later on in the match. That was the only complaint I had about this match. I thought it was great. You know, both guys couldn't really one up the other. Double clotheslining each other, ref bumps. Finally, much to Tony C's chagrin, I love the ending because it looked like he kicked out. But those shoulders were on the mat for the three.
He kicked out.
when Hogan went for that leg drop and missed, like, you wasn't sure that the Ultimate Warrior was supposed to get up from that. I mean,
yeah.
No, because nobody ever did.
Nobody ever moved out of the way of the leg drop.
That's the thing. It's like Hogan's finishing move. Like, how can
talk about that leg drop. That put a lot of people down.
Yeah, put Andre the Giant down.
Yep.
Because Andre let it. Tony C, I know this. I know your butt hurt. I know your hero lost. The kryptonite was set in. Honestly, though, your thoughts on the match besides Hogan losing? What did you think of the match?
I mean, it was a 5-star quality match, except the end.
You know, the shoulders were up, but we digress. And I hope this is the last time for a long time y'all pick a match that Hogan, you know, came up on the short end of the stick, okay?
I can't promise that. I mean, it's not going to be every week, but, you know, we do the turnbuckle throwbacks, and if we find a do-fitting, you know, Hulk Hogan match where he loses. I mean, he lost on my birthday. I may want to do that episode when Luger beat him on my birthday, man.
Come on, man. Well, I mean, come on.
It was on my birthday, 1997, August 4th.
Come on,
it was Monday Nitro. It was on Nitro. We jacked him up. Why
can't we review that Hog Wild 97?
We could.
You got the title back, okay?
Hog Wild.
We got over 30,000 hours of network. I got VHS tapes in the basement. Let's go
review something like that, okay? Or sold out 97 when we have all that footage,
and you know, only a couple hours a week. So we'll get to those. We'll get to all of it because Dave and I have and you guys have your own goddamn shows too.
I know we have our own goddamn shows, but quit pulling out the Hogan coming up on the short end of the stick.
When you call Matt.
If you want to hear all the Hulk Hogan winning matches, listen to the Mega Powers podcast.
Listen to the rant, and maybe Double A would give you a segment. We just talk about Hogan getting over. That's all.
Yeah.
All right.
The clearly biased Tony C show.
Yeah.
With Jimi Hendrix playing in the intro. That's all.
That's all. Voodoo Child. That's it. That's
all
it.
Right. Hollywood.
Surfer, you were saying something, man. You were saying something. I thought I heard you say something.
I said, when you call into my show.
Oh, dude. You know what? Sunday's a terrible time for me. I'm never home on Sunday afternoons. So I got to definitely have to call in. I told you, I read a couple of books I want to talk about. I just don't have the time to, you know, unless the kid wants me to read some books with him because he's learning how to read now. So I'm trying to get him to read the good stuff. You know, I'm trying to break him in. I got all the McFarlanes in the basement. You know, I don't want to.
Your kid like 14? He's just learning how to read now?
No, he's 7. You tool bag. No, I keep. But speaking of your show, I spoke to Double A briefly. I wanna. I don't know if Dave's aware, but the rant, and just for everybody in the chat room, the rant is doing an entire weekend of WrestleMania coverage this year. Double A kind of broke down the schedule yesterday, but Dave and I want to get in on that. I just don't know when, whether it's us calling in to your shows or us doing something, you guys call in or we do some kind of whatever. But that needs to happen. But I'll definitely call in to you on the weekend. I'll definitely just send you a message before I call in so I don't, you know.
Well, yeah, Friday night, just, you know, whatever you want to talk about. That's what the fun show's about.
Yeah, you're doing the fun show, and then we got a round table. I know Will's doing a call in, and then the Rant's doing something. And, again, the Hall of Fame is Saturday night. So maybe, I don't know, I know Dave's going to be here that afternoon, so maybe Dave and I will jump on with you guys.
Yeah.
Or we'll do something, but definitely check out just keep on listening to the rant and check out all the shows. Obviously, you have the call-in show on Saturday nights. You got Surfers, what are you reading on Sundays at 6 p.m., right, sir?
6 p.m.
All right, you got the call-in show at 11 on Saturday nights with Will I Am Morgan with his crew and Rage and all those knuckleheads and Tony C. And you got Tony C doing the rant with Mr. Surfer on Tuesday nights. And now we got the Lex podcast, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, is there a certain time for that? Or he's just in rotation because he ain't live yet, right? I don't even know.
What was that question, too?
Lex, he doesn't have a live spot yet, right? He's just doing the podcast, right?
Yeah, he's doing the podcast.
Yeah.
So he's in rotation. So shout out to all those guys. All right, boys, I'm going to let you two go. Dave and I are going to wrap this up. Thank you so
all
much.
Right.
So thank you so much for calling in tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And I'll talk.
All right, fellas.
And I'll talk to you guys on Saturday, probably.
All right,
boys. Take care. Good night. All right, that's cool. All right, Dave, you there, man?
I'm here.
All right, cool in the gang. All right, thank you for the rant, guys, for calling in tonight. Tony C, in a rage. All right, so here's the deal. We'll wrap this bitch up. Dave, any closing thoughts?
No, other than, you know, it's still, like you mentioned, you can still go back to this match and get caught up in it. The event, you know, it's not the greatest WrestleMania, but I can even go back and watch, you know, these matches and just, you know, just just relive in a way those memories of the past where it just kind of like grabbed you in such a way, like every little thing that was going on, every little intricacy, everything made sense. And it just caught you in this like whirlwind of emotion. So I'll always love WrestleMania 6. Hogan versus the Warrior. It didn't matter who wins. You know, regardless of how Tony C feels. Awesome match. Regardless of what happened later on with the Warrior, I'm not too concerned with that. But it just created so many different, you know, possibilities that were available in wrestling at that point. You know, you had your first major champion versus champion match where there actually was a clean winner. First time seeing a face versus face on a big event. And, you know, in a way it kind of directed how the company was going to go in the future. So this was a huge event.
I loved it. One of my favorites. It's getting better and better. We're getting closer to Mania. And I want to thank everybody in the chat room. I want to thank everybody for the love and support on the Facebook page. You guys are amazing. Remember, we're still having the contest. You guys want to book the Taker Streak, turnbucklethrowbacks1@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at TBuckleTBacks. Join the Facebook page. We're on the Shining Wizards Network. We're on Rant EM Radio, Geek Life Radio, Buzzsprout, Audio Boo, Stitcher, iTunes. Shout out to the Shining Wizards and my boys. Midnight Jury, Neckbreaker, 2.5 Wrestlers, Fallen Angels, Apex Radio, Wolfman, Jack Foley, Just Incredible Pro Wrestling 101. You got The Rant, Tuesdays 8 p.m. You got us at 9 p.m. The Wrestling Call-In Show at 11 on Saturday evenings. What are you reading on Sundays, 6 p.m.? Don Tony, Kevin Castle, Wrestling Soup, The Bloke Show, Mega Powers Radio, NXT Cast, Metal from the Radio, Tattoos and Touchdowns, and the Ham Radio. All right, I think that's it. I think we're done.
Put a fucking fork in it. It's done.
A little Jedi mind tricks. Shout out to Philly for Surfer. All right, guys.
Fans in the chat room.
Yeah, thank you so much for everything, man. All right, so Dave, I guess we're done, man.
We're done with WrestleMania 6.
We'll be back next week. I think we're doing 5, right? 5 or 4? We'll figure it out.
We did 4 in the past, so 5.
We did 4 already, so we'll do 5.
We're going to do 5.
And then we'll go right into 3, and 2 is my favorite.
The powers explode.
All right, we're getting closer to WrestleMania, baby.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys next week. No, I didn't forget soup. Thank you, Tank. I didn't forget the soup. I never did. I have it all written down here in my little cheat sheet. Thank you. Anyway, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Until next week, I am the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, and that's Mega Powers. We'll see you next week. Peace and chicken grease.
Sayonara. We got that murder, murder shit.